All right.
Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and light me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband and ancient tales.
All right. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories about beautiful downtown Chicago. On a late Thursday night, we go into a Friday morning, so all the Friday features will be happening as we do every Friday morning. That'll happen around 3 a.m. We've got Straight Out of Context. That's when you listen to this radio station 24/7, whenever anybody at any time says something that you can pull out of context and it sounds dirty and it makes you laugh. You jot down the date, the time, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. We play those back every Friday morning. Nick D Show Spies, that's when you listen to the station 24/7. Whenever anybody mentions me, we want to know about it and the show. Jot down all the info, send it to nickdshow@gmail.com, and we play those back every Friday morning. We got You Big Dummy. That's where we play, where we read real news stories of real dumb people doing real dumb stuff, and then we vote on who's the biggest dummy. And then Fly Jams Friday. Fly Jams Friday this morning will be the anti-Valentine's Day edition of Fly Jams Friday. And in fact, this is the 23rd annual anti-Valentine's Day show. I hate Valentine's Day. I hate it. I've always hated it. Even when I was with a companion, I've hated it. So every year we've been doing anti-Valentine's Day show. Also on the show, I'm really excited about this. After midnight, we're going to talk with comedian Kurt Braunholer, who is hilarious. He's appearing at Zany's this weekend, and he was a regular on At Midnight. He's a hilarious stand-up comedian. He was in a terrific movie called The Big Sick, he had a show called Bunk that he did on IFC, and he's had some pretty lousy romantic situations that he has put into his material, so we're going to talk with him. So we're going to just open up the phone lines, talk about breakup movies. We are going to talk about terrible breakup songs. If you just want to vent about how much you hate Valentine's Day, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And we're going to do a beef jerky, a beef stick and beef jerky taste test. some exotic stuff here. I've got alligator. I've got boar. It's just crazy. Our listener, Deanna, who is just a wonderful person, sent me this anti-Valentine's Day, really lovely bouquet of fake flowers with a bunch of beef sticks and jerky in it. So we're going to taste test all these exotic, crazy beef sticks and jerky. Our phone number is 312-981-7200, for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. And stay connected with us on Facebook at facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right, in studio with me are from Mortified Chicago, Marnie Shore, who's been on the show talking about food and stuff like that for the takeout. Hi, Marnie.
Hey, how are you?
And for the first time on the show, Annie Kaler. Hi, Annie.
Hello.
Tell us about Mortified. I know about it, and actually, if regular listeners who've been listening for years, I've had Mortified people on the show over the years. I love it. I think it's great. Tell people about Mortified.
Sure. Mortified is a live stage show. It is also a podcast, and it is a Netflix series. And it stars people reading aloud the things that they wrote as children and adolescents, right. Whether that's journals or bad song lyrics or sappy poetry. And they dig it out of their closets, and they find it, and they perform it for all of us, and we all like to share the shame mm-hmm. together.
Yeah, it's lovely. I've been to a bunch of the live performances. I've had people on over the years to talk about it. I think it's just such a great concept. I mean, obviously the series on Netflix is fantastic.
Yeah,
it's so funny to have people get up on stage and share this ridiculous stuff that we did when we were kids, and it is cathartic.
Oh, yeah.
And it's also really funny. And we can laugh at ourselves and laugh at other people. And I think it takes a lot of courage to get up on stage and do that. That's the one thing that I find. So we're going to talk about a special show that you guys are doing. It's the Mortified Doomed Valentine Show, which is happening tomorrow at Sleeping Village on Belmont. And we're going to talk all about that. You guys are a perfect fit for the anti-Valentine's Day
perfect.
Show. Okay, we'll talk more with Marnie and Annie here on 720 WGN as the Nick DiGilio Show continues. Yes, it does. The Nick DiGilio Show continues on 720 WGN. Valentine's Day is about 44 minutes away, and it sucks. So we're doing the 23rd. This is my 23rd annual anti-Valentine's Day show. We'll talk a little bit later on why we hate Valentine's Day. And if you want to share any of your stories, it's 312-981-7200. Joining me in studio is Marnie Schur and Annie Kaler from Mortified Chicago. And you're doing a Mortified Doom Valentine's Day show tomorrow night, yes. Starting at 8 o'clock, Sleeping Village at 3734 West Belmont. Again, Mortified is where people go up on stage and read some of the stuff that they wrote or drawings that they did when they were a kid or a teenager. Sometimes it's film. It's a multimedia thing about getting up on stage and purging yourself about the embarrassing things that you did when you were a kid. And it's a wonderful thing. You can follow it. You can watch it on Netflix. And it's just become this thing. We were talking about the origins of it. It started in L.A., is mm-hmm. that right?
Yeah, 18 years ago.
18 years ago. And now it's how many cities?
17 cities.
That's amazing.
Around the entire world, too, which is really cool.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's universal.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody is embarrassed by what they did when they were 14, you know? There's just no question about it. So why don't you tell me about, Annie, tell me about the Doom Valentine's Day show.
So tomorrow is the Doom Valentine's show, so it's all about our worst experiences with
awesome.
Love when you're in, like, middle school, high school. So we have love letters, we have
it's gonna be so embarrassing.
Beautiful love song that was written and recorded. We have just people pining after everyone in their lives who
did comic strips.
Comic strips.
Oh, somebody did a comic strip?
Oh, yeah. It covers everything,
yeah.
Which is incredible. And also, like, makes me feel better about all of the love letters I wrote
yeah.
in middle school and delivered.
Yeah, yeah. And so how many people are involved?
How many? Five performers?
Yeah, five or six performers.
Oh, yep.
And, and we have several producers, each of whom works with the performers mm-hmm. to get their stories in tip-top embarrassing shape.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've been to many of the Mortified shows, and it's just delightful. It really is. It taps into something that everybody can feel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why I think it works so well. And we've all had crappy relationships in the past, especially when you're a kid, especially when you're in high school. It's ridiculous. Now, have either of you ever gone up on stage and done a Mortified?
I haven't yet. I want to so badly. I wrote rough drafts of all of the love letters that I sent, and I know that I have them. I just tucked them away so deep that I haven't found them yet.
Yeah,
but I'm searching for them.
So you wrote multiple love letters.
Oh, every boy that I had an eye on. I wrote a love letter too, and because I'm a writer, I would write drafts and I would like cross things out and like pick the perfect word, and then I would decorate it and deliver it.
Oh, that's fantastic!
Wow. Yeah. You overthought it, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, a little bit.
let's get both your backgrounds. You know, Marnie, you've been on the show before, but Annie, what's your background? You said you were a writer.
Yeah. So I'm a writer and editor. I was freelancing for a while. Now I'm at Leo Burnett. As an editor.
Ooh.
I know. It's a very recent thing.
So getting the golf clap from
you.
Tom. Very nice.
I'm very excited to talk
That's
about
awesome.
It.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's a nice job
it's
right there.
It's so fun. And I was just talking to Marnie about it. I loved freelancing, but I also love being around people.
Yeah.
So
it's also nice to have insurance and stuff.
Yeah. That's the first thing. That's how I announced it to all my friends.
Right.
I have health insurance for the exactly. first time in a year.
Isn't that fantastic?
I'm not terrified of every time I leave my house.
Yeah. I felt that way when they gave me the full-time gig here. I was like, I got health insurance.
Yeah, like I can do anything.
This is fantastic.
I got dental. I'm going to go to the exactly. dentist for the first time in 2 years. So buck wild. That's crazy time.
No, it's so funny because, you know, like I'm in my 50s now. And so, you know, that kind of stuff, when you're in your 20s, yeah, whatever, I'm indestructible. It doesn't matter. What I don't have health insurance, whatever. But you hit that 40 mark, and you're like, man, I got
scarier.
Out of bed, and I pulled my back standing up. You know, that kind of stuff happens. We're talking with Marnie Scherr and Annie Kaler from Mortified Chicago. Their show, Mortified Doom Valentine's Show, is happening tomorrow night. Tell me what I've never heard of the venue, Sleeping Village at 3734 West Belmont. What about Sleeping Village?
Well, it's in Avondale, and it is a bar and venue for different stage shows and things
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm. It's got a cool name.
Yeah. And I'll be honest, I haven't been there either.
Oh.
Yeah, it's our first time there, and our next show is there, too.
So you got two shows
really
there. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Marnie, have you done Mortified?
I have. I have been a Mortified presenter on three separate occasions.
Ooh. Well, you got a checkered past.
Yeah.
A lot of things to get through.
You know what? When your piece is embarrassing enough, they just ask you to do it again.
Oh,
so
I see.
Have performed it in Chicago and L.A. I think it might have even been too embarrassing for the L.A. crowd.
Oh,
it was
wow.
not glamorous enough. just kidding. They're very accepting.
Okay, well, what was it? What happened? What did you share?
I was a 14-year-old who loved God, hated smokers, and was always mad at my sister.
The Holy Trinity.
That's right. And so I
what was it about smoking? I mean, it's you know, it's a terrible habit, and it's not attractive, I don't think. I used to smoke. By the way, here's a little Mortified thing. You want to hear something Mortified?
Please.
I quit nicotine and caffeine on the same day.
No.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And I was a real pleasure to be around.
Yikes.
Yeah, I haven't. It's been 17 years, I think, since I quit smoking and quit the caffeine.
And now you drink a lot of milk, right?
Yes, I drink a lot of milk.
The last time
Marnie was here, Marnie, by the way, tell everybody about The Takeout real quick.
Oh, yeah. I'm editor-in-chief of a food website called The Takeout. You can find it at thetakeout.com. And it's all about food and how food is delicious. So we came on here to do a milk taste test a few weeks ago.
Yes. It was oat milk. We did an oat milk taste test.
Fake milk, right?
Fake milk. That's not the real. As soon, you know, it was funny because it was like a blind taste test. And as soon as I tasted the actual real dairy milk, I went, this is the real stuff.
Yeah, you were too much of an expert in milk.
No, I'm not kidding. I'm single. I live alone. I go through a gallon of milk a week. I'm not kidding. I've been a milk drinker my whole life. I don't know why. It's just, you know.
Well, it's cheaper than cigarettes.
It is certainly cheaper.
True.
Yeah, that's the reason I quit. I quit smoking when the cigarettes hit $5 a pack. I went, that's it.
Yeah,
how much is it now? Like, how much is it for a pack of smokes now? Like $12?
Some places I've seen 12 signs.
If you're lucky.
Yeah, 12 if you're lucky. It's usually around like $14.
You're kidding.
$14 for a pack of cigarettes.
That's ridiculous.
And that's even in the suburbs.
That's ridiculous.
I checked in Oak Park at Christmas time, and I saw like $14 a pack, and I gasped, and the cashier said, are you not from around here or something?
Yeah.
I was like, no, I just never looked because I'm not a smoker.
It's funny because I watch Dazed and Confused, the movie. I watch that probably monthly. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. And every time they stop at the gas station or the liquor store to get the booze while they're driving in the car, they walk past the sign. It's like 63 cents for a pack of smokes.
Wow.
Different world.
So, all right. So you hated smoking. You loved God and you bugged your sister.
That's right. And I caught my sister smoking and I journaled about it very angrily. And life was confusing.
You were how old at this? 14?
14, 15.
Okay.
And I think that the anger and resentment in the journal is really what kind of made it a segment for Mortified. And, you know, And the audience, I think, understands, like, just having this latent anger that has to go somewhere.
Yeah.
You know,
oh,
as a teenager, you've got this
There's
anger.
So much emotion at all times.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, as a teenager, your hormones are going nuts anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You just channel it into anger about your sister.
That's so
funny. Anger about smoking. And and then I wrote some angry poetry as well. And it was
so beautiful.
Yeah, like angry anti-capitalist poetry. And it's
not
been...
to give away. If you don't want to give away your age, but what era are we talking about? Because it might put some things into perspective here.
Sure, you know, a lot of this was happening in like 2002.
Okay,
and I was talking a lot about. I casually referenced the war.
Oh
a lot.
Yeah, of course you did.
You know, like because that didn't matter to a teenager. Smoking mattered to a teenager much more than any impending conflict
right.
and. So that was definitely kind of a funny contrast to find later as an adult. I certainly didn't realize it at the time.
Yeah.
And that's what Mortified's all about, is finding those threads later in your life.
God. Marnie Shore and Annie Kaler from Mortified Chicago are here, and we're talking about the Mortified Doomed Valentine's show, which you can see tomorrow night at Sleeping Village at 3734 West Belmont. It's 21 and over. I just want to make sure people know that. But everybody has... You know, the skeletons in the closet.
Oh, yeah.
And Mortified's been around 18 years.
Yeah.
That's crazy cool. And how long has the Chicago faction been going on? I know it's been a lot of years because I've had people on in the past.
It has. I mean, certainly several years at this point. I'm not sure exactly how many.
Yeah.
But it always attracts a sold-out crowd. Because
yeah.
I think that people just connect to it so much.
Completely.
Makes us all feel better.
Oh, man. I mean,
who we are.
I can't even think of the stuff that I would do when I was 14 or 15 or something like that. It's just
sometimes
absurd.
You don't want to.
I had a very weird sort of like my later teenage years in terms of like the romantic teenage years were weird.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a very weird relationship. It's a very unusual one. When I was like 17 or 16, I started dating... my manager at McDonald's.
Oh, power dynamics.
Who was 21 and had a kid.
Oh, my.
And I'm not, I know. I see the look on your face. I was a 16-year-old kid with a 21-year-old girlfriend who had a 4-year-old daughter. And we stayed together for 5 years.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So
it was a lot to deal with as a 16-year-old.
It was, I look back at it and I'm like, what was wrong with this woman? Well, what was wrong with... Well, I was like 16, and, I was like,
better.
You know?
An older woman.
And my friends loved it because, like, whenever there was, like, for prom, she bought booze. She was able she was able to get booze for everybody.
Yeah.
So I was the king, man. And she's like, you got a 21-year-old girlfriend who can buy booze, you know? But, you look back at it, and I'm like, man, how unhealthy kind of a relationship is that? And she was my girlfriend. Like she would come over for Christmas and bring her daughter, and it was just this thing.
Wow.
So I had a very unconventional, like at least that part from like 16 to we dated for 4 years, I think. 16.
Did you journal about it? Mm. Do you have love letters?
Why? She wrote me. She wrote love letters to me. I was not a big love letter writer.
Mm.
But yeah. So that's not a relationship that's normal. So I would not share that at Mortified because I think people would be mortified. So, all right. So we're talking with Marnie Shore and Annie Kaler from Mortified Chicago. If you would like to jump in with Mortified stuff, stuff that you had when you were a teenager, stuff that you did, 312-981, if you want to share, talk or text, 312-981-7200. Nick DiGiulio show continues here on 720. Nick DiGiulio show here on 720 WGN. It's the 23rd annual Anti-Valentine's Day show. After midnight, Kurt Braunholer is going to join us. He's a really hilarious guy. He's got Zanies this weekend. We're going to talk about breakup movies. We're going to talk about breakup songs. It's Anti-Valentine's Day, so if you want to share any of that stuff. We're going to do a beef jerky beef stick taste test. That's a very Valentine's Day thing, don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm going to do tomorrow.
Marnie Shure and Annie Kaler from Mortified Chicago are with us. They have a show tomorrow night, February 14th on Valentine's Day, at Sleeping Village, which is at 3734 West Belmont. It's the Mortified Doomed Valentine's Day show. Very excited for you, for everybody to come out and see it. And Mortified, for people who just tuned in, Mortified is this show where people go up on stage and read from their journals or share what they were thinking or artwork or anything like that that they were doing when they were like a teenager or a kid. That you're all mortified about, and that's what it's about. By the way, that song, Tom Hush is my producer. Tom, that Nazareth song that you just played, "Love Hurts." I was watching this countdown show on the Access TV. It's like the best of countdown show, and they did the best breakup songs of all time, and that was on the list. And they showed vintage footage of Nazareth performing it, and at different venues, and at every venue, the lead singer would perform it with just a jean jacket, no shirt. I don't know if that was his costume on stage. If at every it seems to me, I guess at every Nazareth show, the lead singer would come out with just a jean jacket on. But it was the 70s, so that he could. I bet he watches that footage and is mortified. 630 sends in a text, and if you want to text us or call us and send your, you know, share your mortified stuff, 312-981-7200. Hi, I love this mortified idea. Can someone read from their teenage journal? I had major teen angst. That's a big one, right? The journals?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's, I would say, like, a big bulk of it.
Yeah.
It's so fun.
Yeah, and especially, you know, I mean, you do mortified year-round. You do a bunch of shows year-round, mm-hmm. and we'll talk about that. But there's something especially mortifying about, you know, love when you're a kid and a teenager, don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
You can't even articulate it yet, but you are infatuated with it,
yeah.
and you can't think of anything else.
And it feels like the end of the world in a way that nothing else has so
yeah.
far, which is so hard to grapple with at the time.
Yeah. I had a crush on a girl when I was, I don't know, maybe third grade, fourth, fifth grade, something like that. I was a kid. And I remember her name was Valerie. And I thought she was adorable, and I really had a big crush on her and stuff. And so she agreed to, like, hold hands with me. And so this was a big deal.
Yeah.
And so I held hands with her, and then, you know, I completely fell in love with her. And just fell completely in love with her. And so I wrote her a note, and I can't remember what I wrote on it, but I remember I folded it, and I drew a picture of a heart on it.
Yes.
And with an arrow pointing next to it that said boom boom.
Wow.
And that's what I gave her. I gave her the note, and she like about a week later, she's holding hands with another guy or
no.
another kid. Yeah. And I was devastated.
Oh, heartbreaking.
I was devastated. But yeah, her name was Valerie. I wonder what she's
heartbreaker.
Doing now. Yeah, no, she was a heartbreaker.
Still breaking hearts, probably.
I guess that was like third grade or something. So I don't know how old are you in third grade?
Like nine, maybe. Nah,
yeah, that sounds
only
about
if
right.
You had still had that note.
Yes.
We could read
I gave it to her. I'm sure she probably threw it in the garbage. I drew the heart on it. I remember that. I don't remember the content of the letter itself, mm-hmm. but I drew a heart and wrote boom boom on it with an arrow pointing to the heart in case she didn't know what that meant.
Wow.
Where's the boom boom coming from?
Yeah.
I need the arrow.
What's that going on? So what are some of your teenage years, your romantic teenage years, were they embarrassing?
Yeah, the one that stands out most, and I wasn't the big culprit in it, but I had a boyfriend. I think I was a freshman, so I was way too old for this to be okay.
So you were 14 then?
Yeah. And I never spoke to him in person because I was terrified. And I would see him and I would dart away. But for some reason, we would talk on the phone every single night until like 2 a.m. And my mom would always get so pissed about it.
Yeah.
And we would tell each other how much we loved each other. And then one day he made a joke that he was going to make a t-shirt that said how much he loved me. And at the time, Twilight was a big thing.
Oh, man.
And that was my favorite thing in the world.
Oh,
so
man.
I show up to school as a freshman, and someone runs up to me and says, "Are you Annie?" And I said, "Yes." And they said, "Ben has a shirt that says, 'I love Annie' on it. You need to see this." And somehow I found him, but like still wouldn't speak to him. And it said, "I love Annie" on the front, and on the back said, "And so the lion fell in love with the lamb," which is a quote from Twilight that he absolutely did not understand what it meant.
Oh, no.
Wait, Tom just lost his mind. Tom just lost his mind. Tom's 26 years old, so...
There you go. Yeah, he understands.
Yeah.
I do. all too well.
I have no idea what any of that means.
Oh, it was the worst. His parents then found out that he like took their credit card to buy this t-shirt. They were upset. All of my friends were like, he's gonna kill you. Like, this isn't okay. But in the back of my mind, I was like, that was so romantic.
Oh, that's so funny.
And then we continued dating.
Oh, that is.
And I broke up with him on Facebook Messenger.
Oh,
did sorry.
You? Oh, all
sorry,
did, you, did you finally speak to him at all, ever? Did you make physical contact with him at any stage of the...
I think we went to a movie and he did the, like, stretch and reach. But I was sitting back really far, so he just kept punching my shoulder until I moved. And that was it.
That was it.
Yeah.
That was the extent of the physical contact.
I went on a trip for a week in the summer and was like, I'm sorry, the distance is too much.
Distance and the time.
Yeah.
That is fantastic. Yeah. That is a fantastic story.
Thank you.
It's Marnie Shore and Annie Kaler. Annie, who just shared something really mortifying here on the show.
Yeah,
mortified.
I shouldn't have done that.
Mortified Chicago. The Mortified Doom Valentine's Day show is is tomorrow night at Sleeping Village on Belmont. If you want to join us with your mortified memories of being a teenager or a kid, romantic ones too, or anti-romantic ones, 312-981-7200. Here we got a call. Here's Nancy on WGN.
Hello.
Yeah. So, hi.
Hello.
Nancy. Hi. Go ahead.
How are you?
All right. What's up?
Well, I was in college, and I was desperately in love with this gentleman by the name of George. And we were all standing around in the commons area, you know, where everybody gathered. And I was just kind of sidling up next to him to see if I could get closer to him. And he finally talked to me. And I'm only 5'2", and he was about 6'4".
Oh, wow.
And I'm looking up at him all dreamy-eyed and everything. And he said, Nancy. And I said, yes, George. And he said, would you do me a favor? And I said, anything, George. He said, would you finish blowing your nose? I'm 71 years old and I still remember that incident.
That is great.
That's incredible.
Someone left a lasting impression.
Oh man, what?
Yes, he did.
What a suave gentleman right there.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, he was something.
Nancy, that's funny. Thanks a lot for the call.
Sure.
Right,
bye-bye.
Have a good morning. 312-981. What if you finish blowing your nose?
My God.
It doesn't get more romantic than that. No. It really doesn't. 312-981-7200, talk or text if you want to share any of your mortified memories of being a teen. You mentioned, Annie, that you guys are doing more shows. Tell us a little bit about what's coming up.
Yeah, so our next show is Mortified Mommy Dearest on Mother's Day, which I'm very excited about.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure my mom will probably show up to that one. Mm-hmm. So that's May 10th, also at Sleeping Village, and it's at 7 p.m. Definitely get your tickets as soon as you can, because this one is now sold out, and it sold out pretty fast.
Yeah.
So they go on sale on Friday at Sleeping Village, or sleeping-village.com.
Sleeping-village.com.
Yes.
So that's the website. You can check it out. Check out the venue and get your tickets there. That's really great. Mommy Dearest.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
Very ominous.
Yeah. So is it going to be from both sides? Are you going to have mothers telling their stories and then daughters or sons telling their stories about their relationships with their mom?
Oh, I certainly hope so. We conduct screenings in advance of each show where we sort of hammer out who's going to be presenting. And so for something like the Mommy Dearest edition, we want to make sure that whoever's presenting has a range of stories to tell about their relationship to their mothers or maybe even if they have children now, like how their perspective has changed.
I would love to hear from the point of view of actual, you know, of mothers and their perspective over the years of what they've watched their kids do. You know, I'm sure my mother would get up on stage and just go, all right, I'll be up here for an hour.
Everyone take a seat.
So yeah. And I'm an only child, so you know, that's definitely, you know,
she has a lot of ammo.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd pay to see that.
Oh, I'm sure she's got a ton of ammo. There's no question about it. So yeah. I'm a weird kid. I'm a weird kid now. And I'm a left handed only child. So that's just that's two strikes against me. So, how can people mortify talk about the website a little bit?
Sure. So the website is your source for finding out information about upcoming shows, different cities that it's in. And in addition to the website, we have Mortified Chicago on Instagram, Mortified Chicago on Facebook, and Mortified Chai on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And those are different hubs where people can check what we're up to and everything. And, you know, you can even, if you think you're going to be in another city, I was visiting LA once and they happened to be doing an LA show. So I was able to catch the show. So I have information on all the 17 cities around the world. And if you are interested in getting tickets, you can go to Mortified or go to sleeping-village.com and pick up tickets. And the Mother's Day show is going to be May 10th, and we are going to be selling tickets for that starting pretty soon.
Very cool. Very cool. So that's all of that is you guys are well represented on the internet.
We got it all.
So very cool. So it's Mortified Chicago, and again, we got more here to talk about. If you want to jump in with your mortified stories of romance when you were a teenager or a kid, 312-981-7200 is the phone number for Talk and Text. 312-981-7200. And the Mortified Doomed Valentine show is tomorrow night at 8 o'clock at Sleeping Village on Belmont. Marnie Shore and Annie Kaler are here, and we have more to talk about. 312-981-7200 is the number if you would like to share your mortified teenage stories of romance. 312-981-7200. More of the Nick DiGilio Show is happening as we continue. This song. The anti-Valentine's Day show here on 720 WGN. And it's anti-Valentine's Day throughout the morning here, night in the morning, 312-981-7200. After midnight, Kurt Braunholer, the really funny stand-up comedian, is going to join us. He's got some great anti-romantic stories to tell. We're going to talk about breakup movies and breakup songs. And we got a regular Friday features coming up. And if you want to jump in at any time and share your anti-Valentine's Day sentiments, it's 312-981-7200. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. In studio with me, Marnie Shore, Annie Kaler from Mortified Chicago. The show is tomorrow night, almost tonight, because at midnight it'll be the February 14th. Mortified Doom Valentine's Show at Sleeping Village, where people get up on stage and share their actual teenage stories and journals and pictures and memories of how embarrassing it was to be in love when you were 13 or 14 years old. Now, Annie was kind enough to share one of her mortified teenage in love stories, so it's only fair that Marnie share one as well. Do you have any?
Gosh, if I had a story of teenage romance, my life might have turned out very differently. Yeah. But, you know, I was a teenager who did a lot of community theater.
Oh, boy.
And, nice. You know, not only are
I know there was a reason I liked you.
And, you know, not only are you spending most of your time with people over the age of 45, if you do community theater, you know, it's just not a place where a ton of teenagers congregate, but those teenagers who are there are not necessarily looking to date you as a girl. I think I learned that through much trial and error as a high schooler.
Yeah.
So I wish I had a story of teenage romance, but mostly that involved me having scenes in plays where I was forced to kiss other cast members on the cheek, which was at the time for me very scandalous.
Wow.
And I wasn't even quite sure I could nail that moment, you know, like kissing on the cheek. It just had to look natural, and I just don't think I knew how to do it yet. So that was like a lot of pressure.
Yeah. So besides the community theater thing, did you, when you were in school, did you have a crush on any boys?
Oh, every single one.
Oh, is that right? Was there anybody in particular that stands out?
Well, it is funny because I had a very big crush throughout junior high and part of high school on my friend Sam.
Mm-hmm.
And Sam, you know, we not interested, but we stayed friends, and we were in band together, and we were in classes together, and we stayed friends throughout high school and college, and eventually, he sang at my wedding. He is an opera singer now.
That's so sweet.
And so he sang at my wedding in 2015, and he sang at our other friend's wedding in 2019, and that's kind of become his tradition. So he's there for us every step of the way, even if he never became my boyfriend.
Oh. That's great.
That's awesome. Yeah.
That's great. What, yeah. So what about, where'd you meet your husband?
College.
Oh, in college.
Yeah. Okay. We met like basically the last week of college. So technically it's a college relationship, yeah, but not really in the way that you might think. Like we never dated in college. It was like we were heading out the door and it's like, oh, nice to meet you.
That's nice.
Yeah, just in the nick of the time.
There you go. That's nice. Annie, are you married?
No.
Oh,
no,
okay.
I'm pretty single. Oh, okay. Yeah, thanks for asking.
All right, let's. We got some folks are calling in here. 312-981-7200, and we're talking about being mortified as a teenager romance. Mortified Chicago is the group, and the Mortified Doomed Valentine show is tomorrow night at Sleeping Village, starting at 8 o'clock. Here's Greg on WGN. Hi, Greg.
Hey, how's it going?
All right, what's up?
Annie.
Are you
Greg,
my
the Uber,
Uber
driver?
Driver. Whoa. Oh, I was hoping. Hello.
This whole idea is so fascinating to me. I said I'd listen on the radio. I did, and I've got a story to share.
Okay.
Perfect.
So I lived in a dorm my freshman year at college, had a buddy down the hall who had a sister that was just a knockout. And so I really worked the angle with him for a long time. I didn't really want to be friends with this guy. I still remember his name was Micah. And Micah, his sister would show up probably once a week, really worked that angle, finally said, let's double date. And so we went on the double date. I had all these smooth lines written down. And I proceeded to spend the entire double date talking to Micah.
No.
Never said one word to her after she got in the car the rest of the night. We went, oh, no. We went all the way to another town. We watched a movie. It was Dumb and Dumber.
Oh.
And and we even went and got like ice cream afterwards. I didn't say a word to her. I was so mortified that all I could do was focus on Micah for support, and then we dropped her off.
Oh, man. That's at least, you got to see Dumb and Dumber.
A classic.
It was a good movie.
Sounds
absolutely.
Like
I mean, we still had a good time, but just a wasted opportunity and so embarrassing because I had to see her. On campus, probably every second
and
or third day.
She knew it was a date.
Oh, man.
She knew you were supposed to be on a date.
Yeah, absolutely. I was supposed to be on that date with Micah, turns out. But
I guess.
Anyways, you're doing great, Annie. Thanks for letting
me on.
All right, Greg, take care. That's your Uber driver.
Yeah. I told him about it on the way, and he's like, I'm going to check it out.
Yeah.
Sounds
well,
good.
Well, I'm glad he tuned in.
I
That's
know.
Awesome. Here is Bruce on WGN. Hi, Bruce.
Hey, Nick, how you doing tonight, man?
All right, buddy, go ahead. What do you got?
I got a good story for you. So I still remember this like it was yesterday. I was in second grade, like in the early 80s, and I remember, you know, you can pass out all those little Valentine's cards back in the day, and I was in love with this girl named Jennifer. You know, blonde, curly hair. I was just, you know, in love with her. And for whatever reason, every kid was able to bring in, like, a gift for a boy or a girl, too, you know? And I grabbed the wrong one, and I opened up a Barbie doll. On accident, you know, all the other kids, all the other boys were opening up Hot Wheels. I got a Barbie doll. And I was so upset. I was crying. The whole class, including this girl, was just laughing at me and pointing. And to this day, I thought, man, if I'd only opened the Hot Wheels, you know, maybe life would have been different or something, you know.
But could have been together forever.
You never know.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's great.
But,
that's great.
She laughed at me. How do you laugh at somebody?
Brutal.
That's
not,
what are you going to do? All right, Bruce. Thanks, man. Thanks for sharing, Barbie. Barbie has scarred that guy for life now. That's it.
Forever.
You know, he mentioned this thing that we did in grade school was Valentine's cards, or little Valentine's for kids. I always found that to be weird because, you know, like some kids would get a pile of them. It's like the episode of The Simpsons where Ralph Wiggum didn't get one.
Oh, poor Ralph.
And Lisa felt bad. And he gave her, and she gave him one, and it said, choose me. and then he falls in love with Lisa because of that. And,
there you go.
But it's just, that's so universal, because I always thought it was weird.
Yeah.
That,
yeah.
Like, you know, when you guys were in school, did that happen?
So by the time we were in school, they had changed the rule, which I think is pretty well advised. You could bring either zero Valentines or enough for every single person.
Sure.
Yeah. And you had to address them to everybody in your class, which made it a huge job, but like, you know, then you're not the person who gets zero.
Yeah.
But that's the way to do it. That's the correct way to do it. Now, I'm much older than you guys. And when I was a kid, it was one person gets, you know.
Oh, that's ruthless.
Yeah, no, it's terrible.
No way.
And when that Ralph Wiggum moment happens and you don't have any Valentines on your desk and everybody else has like five or six, it's horrifying.
Yeah. It
really
is. And then everyone sees it, too.
Yeah.
Like, you can't
and
hide
people
that.
Go, look at this. He's just getting the time. Did they, when you were going to school, did they have that wonderful?
You had to get it for everybody.
Yeah.
It had to be for everybody. And somehow I still was always a few short.
No. No. They got lost on the way to school.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sure they did. Yeah. I am sure they did.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Tom, do you have a mortified story about being a teenager in love?
Yeah. I was like the king of the mix CD.
Mix CD. That's how young he is. Not a mixed tape. Not a mixed tape.
Much less work to put
mixed
together.
CD.
I have too many stories like that, too.
So, long story short, I made this mix CD because I had discovered High Fidelity and the rules of making, you know, a great mixtape, all that kind of crap. And made a mix CD for this girl I liked, loaded it with all the weird, you know, I guess I thought it was weird indie stuff that I was like, oh, yeah, she'll really appreciate this, all this kind of stuff. Gave it to her. She was really nice to my face. And then later I got a text like, oh, we were chatting on AIM, on AIM, AOL Instant Messenger. And she says, your music taste sucks. She said, oh, he made the dumbest CD for me. What is all this crap?
Oh.
And I was just destroyed.
No.
That's so mean.
That's awful.
It's the one time that communication has not helped a relationship.
Yeah.
No. Yes.
I was like, all right, cool.
Oh, that's terrible. Even if you don't like it, don't say that.
No.
You know what I mean? Okay, this is the worst mixtape I've ever gotten in my life, but I'm not going to say it to the guy's face.
No.
You choose one track that you kind of like, and you say, I really liked that song.
Yeah.
And then, that was a fun surprise. I've never heard that
throw
before.
The CD out.
You don't have to listen to it.
Right.
No one knows.
Mortified Chicago, Marnie Shore, Annie Kaler, thank you guys so much. Mortified Doomed Valentine Show is tomorrow night, February 14th at 8 o'clock at Sleeping Village, 3734 West Belmont. Is the website just mortified.com?
I think it's getmortified.com.
Getmortified. Okay, getmortified.com for more information. Marnie, Annie, always, it's great to have you. Always, Marnie, love to have
you.
And we want to do some food stuff with you soon.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, and tune in later on when I'm doing the beef stick beef jerky challenge.
Oh, yeah, I need to know which one to buy.
Yeah.
Which ones to buy.
Exactly.
Okay.
All right, thank you, guys. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. The Nick DiGilio Show continues here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here until 4 a.m. It is Friday morning, so we will be doing our regular Friday features, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy, Fly Jams Friday. That's all coming up. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. It is the 23rd annual Anti-Valentine's Day show. I hate Valentine's Day, and we talk about that every year at this time. And if you want to jump in with a text or so with your terrible romantic stories, 312-981-7200. Right now, I would love to welcome to the show Kurt Braunholer, who is a hilarious comedian who's appearing at Zany's this weekend and a very funny guy. Kurt, how are you?
Good, man. How you doing?
Good. I think you're so funny, man. I've been a fan for a really long time.
Oh, thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Let's go back here. When did you first decide you wanted to do comedy? Was it something that you thought about when you were a kid?
No. I think I wanted to be a marine biologist, and then I found out that I'm terrible at science. and so now I'm a comedian.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So where'd you grow up, Kurt?
I grew up in Jersey, Dirty Jersey, baby.
Yeah.
Started smoking when I was 10 because of Jersey.
Sure, of course. We were just talking in the last segment. I had some guests on, and we were talking about smoking. I quit smoking when the pack of cigarettes cost $5. That was like, okay, I can't do this anymore. I was just told. I was just told that it's $14 for a pack of cigarettes.
Oh yeah, man! It is crazy. I don't smoke anymore.
Yeah.
But it just wastes your budget.
Yeah, completely. I was like, man, $5, and now I don't know how people spend $14 on a pack of cigarettes. That's like close to 75 cents a cigarette, something like that. I mean, that's nuts.
It's just because you want to live, man. You gotta live.
So let's talk about how you got into comedy. When did that start for you?
I started doing comedy at Upright Citizens Brigade in New York in 98.
Sure. Yeah.
And then I started doing stand-up in 2004 when I started a show Hot Tub with Kristen Schaal.
Mm.
And we've been running that show every Monday night for 15 years.
Oh,
we
you're
still
kidding.
Do it in L.A.
She's so funny. She is so funny.
She's the best.
Yeah, she's just great. That's great. 15 years. So so you started out at Upright Citizens Brigade, so you did improv first.
Yes. I started off as doing improv and got into the whole cult of improv. I was teaching improv. I just really was like, I was all signed in like it was a church or something.
Yeah.
And then I realized, oh, I need to make money. So I started doing stand-up.
Yeah. Well, all right, cool. So you're in town. You're at Zany's this weekend. What a great room, right?
Oh, it's great. It's just like it's low ceilings, low.
All right.
Sorry, guys.
That's okay.
I apologize. I'm outside a bar right now.
Yeah. All right. Okay. All right. All right. I think I caught it in time. I think we're okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think we're okay. So you started doing that. You started the improv and all that stuff. And what was the name of the movie that Birbiglia made? Mike Birbiglia made a movie about improv. I can't remember.
A very
the name
good movie.
It was a great movie, and because I did, I studied in Second City here in Chicago, and that movie was about as accurate as you can possibly get for the world of improv.
It is. It's a very small world. It's a very small world.
yeah. Exactly. So. So Zany's is tonight, and that's one of the things I've actually did a little stand up at Zany's for a couple of years. And the thing about that room is it's such a great room. But when you're on stage, you could literally you're at the risk of kicking somebody's drink off the off the stage. That's how close
it is.
Yeah,
there is a bar that goes right along the edge of the stage, and it is the first club where there is a bar on the edge of the stage. And there are people right there. If you like kick your foot out, you just like kick somebody in the teeth.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So this is the anti-Valentine's Day show, Kurt, and we wanted to hear some of your maybe sort of your weird romantic stories. And I know that you you told the story about how you proposed to your wife on a hot air balloon. Can we hear?
Oh yeah.
Can we hear?
Oh yeah. No, I proposed to my wife on a hot air balloon, which is a terrible idea. We like got on, and then she immediately panicked because she's scared of heights, which I did not know. So she had a panic attack for a full hour.
Yeah,
and it is terrifying being on a hot air balloon because it is essentially a basket made of turn of the century lawn furniture, and then there's a flamethrower inches from your head. And there's like a real weirdo, you know, like a weirdo who is in the basket with you, you know, a weirdo who has dedicated his life to hot air ballooning,
uh-huh.
And they call themselves pilots, even though they're just piloting something that is going to crash eventually.
Right.
And my wife wouldn't even, my now wife wouldn't even turn around. She was so scared. She was just holding on and like flexing her knees, like, because they told her that was like crash position. Like if we happened to plummet 2,000 feet out of the sky, she was going to jump right at the end.
Yeah.
And then I had to like wait until we landed to propose to her. And then she was just so happy just to be on the ground.
Just to
She's
be
like,
alive.
Hey, I'll marry you. Yes, I love the ground.
I'll marry you just because I'm alive. All right, Kurt.
Yeah.
Kurt Braunholer is with us. Very funny guy, and he's appearing at Zany's this weekend, and we're going to talk more with him at 312-981-7200 is the phone number of the Anti-Valentine's Day Show.
Goodbye to love. No one ever cared if I should live or die. Time and time again, the chance for love has passed me by, and all I know is
It's the Anti-Valentine's Day Show, if you can't tell. It's Nick DiGilio and 720 WGN continuing here. We're in the Skyline studio until 4 a.m. Kurt Braunholer is with us. He's a stand-up comedian. He's playing at Zany's this weekend. Kurt, do you celebrate Valentine's Day?
Yeah, I do. I mean, like, the main thing I think about human beings is, like, the most romantic thing you can do is kiss, you know?
Yeah.
Kiss, like lip to lip. That's so beautiful. But the thing is that your lips are just the top of a tube that runs all the way through your body, the bottom 5 feet of which are filled with, you know what?
Yeah.
I can't say it on radio. And so the best you can hope is just to rub your tube on top of somebody else's tube.
That's a great way of looking at it, Kurt. That's a very romantic way of looking at kissing.
I mean, hey, I'm a romantic at heart. Yeah.
Hey, can I mention that you were a part of a movie that I absolutely adore? You were in The Big Sick.
Yes.
I love that movie. Tell me about what it was like to work on that.
Well, I was cast as Chris. I'm buddies with Kumail and Emily.
Yeah.
But I had read for it. I had read for it in kind of like a studio read in L.A., which I'd never been a part of, and it was very intimidating. Judd Apatow, a bunch of like hardcore comedians were in the audience, and I was very nervous.
Yeah.
And then and I was like, oh my god, I think I got like a movie part. It was my first movie ever. And then for 6 months they just auditioned everyone in LA for my part. And then I was like, oh no, I don't have the part. And then I remember I was about to do a set in Minneapolis at Acme, and Kumail called me and he's like, we want you to be in the movie. And I was like, yeah. And yeah. Then right after I started shooting it, they asked me to write jokes for the movie. So I was on set every day writing punch-up for the movie.
Yeah.
And it was great.
Yeah.
It was really wonderful.
I'll tell you, it was really wonderful to see the success of that movie, because it was a little movie. It ended up making a lot of money, became very, very popular, box office hit, and they got an Oscar nomination for the screenplay, which I love that story.
I mean, that and it doesn't happen anymore. It was so cool that it happened. Like, it's very rare that like a tiny little movie, a $5 million movie, gets an Oscar nod, and it was very cool.
Yeah.
It was super great to be a part of it.
And it's based on their actual relationship, what happened. She was, you know, in a coma. It was just terrific. From beginning to end, I thought that movie was just fantastic all the way through.
Oh, well, thank you. I love to take credit for it, but most of the work was done by Kumail and Emily.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, listen, you know what I miss? I'll tell you what I miss, Kurt. I really miss At Midnight. I watched
it. It was a great show.
Oh, it was so great. It was such a great a showcase for so many funny comedians. And I'm a big fan of Hardwick. I think Hardwick is great. And I just thought that show was great. I watched it every night. And you were great on that show.
Oh, thanks, man. And I before they actually got a like an order for it from Comedy Central, I was doing the show, like the test show at Meltdown at Kumail and Jonah Ray's show.
Yeah.
Where they were just like test it out, and they were just like, oh, you get this show. And I was like, yeah, I get this show, because I used to I hosted a show on IFC called Bunk.
Yep.
Which was like in 2012, which was kind of like the earlier version of it, and I was like, yeah, no, I totally get this show.
Yeah.
And I loved At Midnight. It was so much fun to do.
Yeah. Tell me the process of shooting an episode of At Midnight, because, I mean, obviously, I would guess that you guys went long and did more bits, and they would have to cut it down to 22 minutes.
Yeah, you would get there 2 hours before they would tape, and you would get, like, the ideas of what was going to happen at that point, and they had a writing team that would like give you suggestions on what to say, and like, you know, for people who weren't comedians, they would just like take whatever the writing team had, but all the comics would just sit there for 2 hours and freak out, like trying to write good jokes.
Yeah.
And then, so it was like, it felt very like, you know, exciting and live, because you're like, you just wrote these jokes like 20 minutes before you're actually saying them on television.
Yeah. It was great. I've talked to other people who have been on At Midnight, you know, other comedians who have been on At Midnight, and everybody seems to have really, really loved that show. And I know that Hardwick was hosting 55 shows at that time. So I know his schedule was
so crazy.
Yeah.
So crazy how many shows he had at that time.
It's just nuts. You know, and you know, Walking Dead was you know, obviously still on. Walking Dead is still on. And he was hosting The Wall at that time, and so many other shows. So I know he was busy. There's a lot on his plate. But it was I loved it because it was a showcase for comedians. And so many of the regulars who were on that show were just absolutely hilarious. I talked to Nikki Glaser about being on it. And she, you know, echoed what you just said about how much fun it was actually to be on that show.
Uh, I love Nikki. Nikki is a good friend of mine from back in the day, yeah. And I'm so happy that she's blowing up right now.
Absolutely. She's coming to town. She's 2 sold-out nights at the Vic here in Chicago in March.
Nice.
Yeah. No, she's I love her. Great. I think she's great. I always have. We're talking with Kurt Braunholer, who is a stand-up comedian. He's playing at Zany's this weekend down on Wells, and it's the anti-Valentine's Day show. Do you have any broken-hearted high school, maybe young love stories?
Well, you know, I dated a girl when I was I started dating her when I was 18, and we dated for 13 years.
Wow!
And then, 13 years. And then when we were 31, I was like, "Hey, we have never talked about getting married." And she said, "I think we should sleep with other people before we get married." And then we did this crazy thing that I was like, "Well, we should do a rumspringa," which is like the Amish idea of like when you're 16, you just go crazy.
Right.
So we gave ourselves 30 days to sleep with as many people as we possibly could to decide whether or not we should get married. And guess what? It's a bad idea to stay together.
That is ridiculously funny. That is, and you guys came up with this idea when you were 31?
Yep. Yeah.
Oh man, that is hilarious. That's a great story to share on the anti-Valentine's Day show. I can tell you that, Kurt. Absolutely. So, you on the road a lot?
You know, at this point, I just do, you know, I just had a second kid, so I just do like one weekend a month.
Yeah.
That's kind of like good for me. I'm mainly just trying to make it work, living in LA.
Yeah.
And so just like, you know, writing a lot and, doing some acting. So that's what I'm doing right now.
So you mentioned Bunk, which was a show that I loved. So how'd you come up with the show? And there are ridiculous challenges on it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like our first one, which was very exciting, was Shame That Puppy and Everyone. The three contestants had to like reach inside of their podium and pull out a puppy and then really tell it to go to hell. I think I can say hell, right? That was created by Ethan T. Berlin and Eric Bryant, and they were buddies of mine, and we created it. They funded the pilot on their own. And then we kind of put it into this New York Television Festival submission, and then IFC picked it up, which was like so exciting. Then we got to make 10 episodes.
Yeah, it was a really terrific show. It was just a lot of fun. Did you enjoy doing it?
Oh yeah, totally. Michael Che, that was his first TV gig ever.
Oh, is that right?
We had a lot of great people on it.
Wow,
Michael Che, that was his first TV.
Wow, and now he's a co-head writer of SNL and on Weekend Update.
Saturday Night Live,
yeah, absolutely. Wow. So do you have favorite, besides Zany's here in Chicago, do you have favorite places to play across the country?
Of course. In Chicago, I love the Hideout.
Mm-hmm.
I just did a spot at the Hideout, which was real nice. I think my favorite places to play are like Portland, Austin, LA, Chicago, and New York.
Yeah.
Those are like my favorite.
Yeah. Is that kind of do a lot of comedians feel the same way about those cities? Are they just good for stand up?
I don't know, cuz you know, my stand up is a little bit weird.
Yeah.
And so I do find like a major metropolitan place is a little better than the middle of nowhere. Middle of nowhere people get freaked out.
Right. They get freaked out by the content of your material.
Yeah, you know, it's a little weird. I have a specific take, very absurd.
Yeah,
and some people get uncomfortable with it. Not in Chicago.
No,
Chicago's great.
Yeah, no, we're weird here. We're weird, Kurt. So you fit right in. No question about it. How often?
I love it.
How often do you write?
I write every day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but now, you know, most of my writing time is taken up with like TV and movies. And so, stand up weirdly is kind of like taking a second seat.
Yeah.
Just cause, you know, I get, you know, I have 2 children, so I have to make money with
what
I write.
Absolutely. I understand.
Exactly.
What do you got coming up? You mentioned TV, you mentioned movies. What are you working on? What do you got coming up that we can see?
So I have a new podcast that's coming out. It's called Bananas. It's going to be on Exactly Right Media, which is My Favorite Murder is a very popular podcast. It's their new network.
Yeah.
And so that's coming out, I think, April 27th. So that's coming out soon. And then I have, I'm on the American Housewife right now on ABC, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and I got some movies and some TV in the works, but you know, you never know what's going to take.
Keeping busy. That's all that counts.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. That's great. Well, Kurt, you know, I think you're, I just think you're hilarious, man. And
thank you, man.
And I'm happy to say that, and it, you know, I'm not surprised. All your shows are sold out at Zany's, for this week.
Woo-hoo!
So that's how it's working. So congratulations, Kurt. Great to talk to you, man. And thanks for being on the show.
Have a good one.
Okay, man. There you go. Kurt Braunholer. Really funny stand-up comedian. If you're not familiar with him, check him out. He's got a Comedy Central hour-long set called Trust Me, which is a couple of years old, and it's really hilarious. And if you've not seen the movie The Big Sick, we talked about it. Tom, you've seen The Big Sick, right?
Yeah, we saw it the first weekend it came out, and
it's just a lovely movie.
Well, and it takes place in Chicago.
It does.
It really captures the
shot
scene.
In L.A., but it takes place in Chicago.
You know, there's no fixing that, unfortunately.
The grocery store chain that they go to in the movie does not exist in Chicago.
Yeah, they go to Ralph's.
It's like I think it's like
a Kroger or something.
Something like that. Something that doesn't happen. That we go to Jewel.
When are we finally going to get the movie that shoots inside a Jewel?
An actual Jewel's?
I'm really waiting for that day, because then I'll know. I'll be like, okay, this was definitely
Chicago. Look at that. It says farm stand, and they're getting produce. that's a Jewel.
They went in on that, you know, the half price chicken day.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I think that's what, Mondays?
I saw online somebody was ranking rotisserie chicken, you know, like the best rotisserie chicken. Jewel has fantastic rotisserie chicken. So, anyway. All right. Well, my thanks to Kurt Braunholer, who is a very funny guy. I mean, thanks for him for joining us. And we are going to talk about breakup movies. If you want to buy the anti-Valentine's Day movies, the most inappropriate movies that you could possibly show on Valentine's Day. 312-981-7200.
It's too late, baby, now. It's too late. Though we really did try to make it. Something inside has died, and I can't hide, and I just can't fake it.
Hey, happy Valentine's Day. It's the anti-Valentine's Day show. I do it every year. Nick DiGilio here, and we would love to hear from you with your breakup stories or anti-Valentine's Day memories. 312-981-7200. We're going to dive into the best anti-Valentine's Day movies. Phone lines are open. Text lines are open. 312-981-7200. What are the most inappropriate movies or the most anti-Valentine's Day movies to watch on Valentine's Day, celebrating how much we hate it? 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. You know that song that Tom just played is one of my favorite songs of all time. Of course, Carole King. It's Too Late. The amazing thing about that song is that was written about her relationship with James Taylor. And then, you know, like some years later, they toured together, and I saw we went to the United Center and saw it. And saw the show, and it was unbelievable. They were both on stage together at the same time doing each other's songs. And it was a great show. I mean, Carole King, if you think about you have to think about how many unbelievable songs that Carole King wrote, not just for herself, but for other artists. She has written some of the greatest songs in the history of music. That show with her and James Taylor, it was weird. It was just weird because James Taylor, you know, singing back up on It's Too Late, which is a song about their relationship. I mean, it's just very strange. It's very strange. It's very weird because that's really one of the saddest songs of all time. It's Too Late. And just to be up there, and to know that that song was written about you, this relationship you had with this woman, and now you're performing it in front of thousands of people. Of course, that was a nightly occurrence for Fleetwood Mac. Go Your Own Way was written about Lindsey Buckingham, and he had to sing it. He had to sing it like every night with Stevie Nicks standing next to him, you know. So it's just weird. But It's Too Late is it's such a great song, and it's such a sad song. So, and that's what we're talking about. We're talking about anti-Valentine's Day, but now we're jumping into movies. We'll do, we'll talk about your favorite songs, anti-Valentine's Day songs, a little bit later on. But the phone lines and text lines are open if you want to jump in. It's 312-981-7200. Best anti-Valentine's Day movies. Talk or text 312-981-7200. Here's Ike. Go ahead, Ike.
Hey, Nick, how's it going with you, man?
Good.
Yeah, there's this one movie I remember. I think it's kind of underrated. It's not just a breakup movie. It's kind of a revenge type of movie about a woman getting back at her husband for a mistress. It was with Meryl Streep and Roseanne, She-Devil.
Yeah, She-Devil. I haven't seen the movie since it came out.
Yeah, I liked it. It was pretty good. I thought it was a very good revenge movie, Roseanne getting back at her husband for cheating with Meryl Streep.
Yeah. I don't remember much about it, but it's certainly an appropriate movie to watch for anti-Valentine's Day. All right, Ike, thanks.
No problem.
I'm trying to remember who directed She-Devil. I want to say it was Susan Seidelman. And I can't remember who played the husband. I remember Roseanne Barr and Meryl Streep were in it, and it was not I didn't think it was a very good movie, and it also didn't make a lot of money.
Yeah, it was Susan Seidelman.
Who played the husband?
Ed Begley Jr.?
No, that's right, Ed Begley Jr. It was Ed Begley Jr.
That's great.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it does make me think of the movie The Handmaiden. Did you ever see that?
The Handmaiden? Who was in it?
It was like a Korean movie.
Oh, yeah.
The lesbian revenge movie.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, I did see it.
It's a crazy good movie.
It is. Yeah, it is. It is. So there you go. There's another one we can watch here. Here's Greg on WGN, anti-Valentine's Day movies. 312-981-7200. Hi, Greg.
Hey, Nick, how are you?
All right, what's up?
So there's one that stands head and shoulders above the rest. Malicious with Molly Ringwald from 1994. Have you ever seen Malicious?
I don't think I have. Molly Ringwald?
Okay.
Yeah, no.
She has a one-night stand with a semi-pro baseball player while his girlfriend is out of town.
Mm-hmm.
The girlfriend comes back. He ghosts Molly Ringwald, and she spends the rest of the movie trying to kill him.
Oh, man. See, and it's Molly Ringwald?
Yes. The other aspect of this is Molly Ringwald goes full nude in the movie. Yes.
Wow.
So 1994, Molly Ringwald finally gives every teenage boy from the 80s exactly what they asked for.
Wow.
And she throws herself down a flight of stairs and claims that he beat her up. She smashes herself in the face with a kitchen cabinet door.
Jeez.
The first quarter of the movie is sort of them, you know, doing their thing while the girlfriend is gone. And then the rest of the movie is Molly Ringwald just either trying to kill him or beating the hell out of herself and trying to get him arrested for beating her up.
Wow. All right, I'm going to have to see this movie. Greg.
Malicious.
Malicious.
It's nuts.
Okay, thanks, Greg.
Yeah, bye.
I've never even heard of that movie.
Yeah.
Who else is in it? What do we got on this?
So, Patrick McGaw, if that rings a bell. Mimi Kuzik, Sarah Lazes, but here's someone actually you will know. John Vernon.
John Vernon. It had to be one of his last movies.
Yeah, though. Dean Warmer.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in it. And it's really weird because, you know, most movies have a pretty decent, like, at least Wikipedia entry. This might be one of the shortest Wikipedia entries for a movie I've ever seen. It's two paragraphs. One, describing what the plot is, and two, explaining that apparently the movie was used as an illustration for borderline personality disorder.
Really?
Yeah. So that's interesting.
I'm really intrigued now.
Yeah, Molly Ringwald.
Molly Ringwald going nuts. I like that. I'm a fan of Molly Ringwald. Okay. All right, there you go. Malicious, everybody, if you're looking for a movie to watch on Valentine's Day.
And you love Molly Ringwald.
And you love Molly Ringwald. Who doesn't love Molly Ringwald? 312-981-7200. We're talking anti-Valentine's Day movies. What are the most inappropriate movies to watch on Valentine's Day? Anti-Valentine's Day movies. 312-981-7200. WhatCulture.com put together a list of the best anti-Valentine's Day movies. And their intro goes this. Love is, as the one of the songs tells you, is a many-splendored thing, a source of boundless joy for some, a bottomless pit of despair for others. Sometimes a bit of both at the same time still. Wherever you stand on the matter of love, surely most of us can agree what an overblown spectacle St. Valentine's Day generally is. Sure, there's no real harm in giving lovers an excuse to treat one another. Still, to promote a sense of obligation to make a display of affection on one specific day per year, and that's my big complaint about Valentine's Day. Just because that's where the media and social convention dictates, really, how where's the romance in that? Some wonder then that while shop windows and advertising turn pink, fluffy, and jewel encrusted for this time, demanding that we spend vast quantities on our significant others because they think that we don't care about them otherwise. As such, while for some the 14th of February is the day to snuggle up in with a nice, non-threatening romantic comedy, some might find it the perfect day for the polar opposite, movies in which true love does not conquer all and the frailties and frivolities of our popular concept of romance are laid bare. If you truly hate Valentine's with a black-hearted vengeance, any of the following 10 movies should go right down with your pink ash, your pink champagne, or in milk tray. So we've got some of the most anti-Valentine's Day movies in front of us. And 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in. We got some texts coming in. And here is David on WGN. Hi, David.
Hey, Nick. You know, I also got to check out that Molly Ringwald movie. I never thought she did such a thing.
Yeah.
But, man. Okay, the movie, I don't know if you know this, it's with Jamie Lee Curtis. It's called Mother's Boys.
Yes, of course. I know everything that Jamie Lee Curtis has been in, and I've seen Mother's Boys several times.
Okay, I just saw it this week.
Yeah.
All right, then. Take care.
All right, thanks, David. Yeah, Mother's Boys, she plays like a nut. It's like a psycho woman movie, and Jamie Lee Curtis, it's funny because like she's been in so many movies where the guys are slashers, and they're trying to kill her. And it's like one of the geniuses of the casting of that movie is that they put Jamie Lee Curtis in the role, and she's really good in it. Have you seen Mother's Boys?
I have not. No, I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, no, she's really good in it, and it's really good. And it's, again, that's a perfect one to watch on Valentine's Day. More texts coming in. 708 says, I would think the first Species movies would be a candidate for at least second thoughts. Species, I love that movie.
They create, like, the guy sleeps with a woman or something, like, and they creates a whole new weird monster. I haven't seen it in years.
Yeah, yeah, and it's Natasha Henstridge.
Oh, jeez.
The cast is amazing. Look up the movie Species, because the cast is insane. Like, Ben Kingsley's in it. It's this sort of, like, it's basically a B-movie. And I can't even remember who directed it.
Roger Donaldson.
Oh, yeah, Roger Donaldson directed it.
Yeah, Ben Kingsley, Michael Madsen, Alfred Molina, Forrest Whitaker, and Marge Helgenberger.
Yeah. And it's a good one. Species is a good one. The first one. Because I think there were two sequels and they both stunk, but the first one is really good and very funny. Species is a very funny movie. Ben Kingsley's completely over the top in it. Completely. 301 says, you could always just show My Bloody Valentine. Yeah. I like the remake. I know I'm in the minority on that, but I like the. In fact, I like the remake more than the original. But yeah, I was in high school when the original came out, and it was just one of the. You know, as I've told you before, I went to high school between '79 and '83, and every week there was a slasher movie that was named after a holiday. After Halloween came out, that was it. It was just the slasher genre just. Was in top form in the late 70s and into the early 80s. And My Bloody Valentine fits into that one. My Bloody Valentine has some staying power, though. People love that movie.
Yeah, people are really into it.
Yeah,
really.
No, they really...
That's one with the miner with the pickaxe,
yep,
right?
Yep.
Goes after teens.
Yep. And the remake was My Bloody Valentine 3D. It was in 3D. I thought the remake was great. I enjoyed it. All right. Anti-Valentine's Day movies. What inappropriate movies to show on Valentine's Day? Let's celebrate it. We're talking about anti-Valentine's Day stuff, and we want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200.
But you don't have to call me darling. Darling. You never.
Yes. Anti-Valentine's Day continues here on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We would love to hear from you. Talk or text. We are talking about the best anti-Valentine's Day movies, and we would love to hear from you 312-981-7200 as part of the Anti-Valentine's Day show. All right. Here is Taxi Driver Bob. Hey, Bob.
I always love this show when you put it on, man.
Thank you.
It's awesome. Have you ever seen the movie Cheery 2000?
Of course, yeah. Melanie Griffith.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that was an unusual movie.
Yeah.
And entertaining.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's great. Yeah, it's a great movie. Yeah. It's actually one of my favorite Melanie Griffith performances is in that movie.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, you guys have a good night.
All right, Bob. Thank you.
All right.
There you go. That's Taxi Driver Bob. And that Cherry 2000 is a really terrific movie. If you've not seen it, it's a B movie, and it's not recognized as like a big Melanie Griffith film. Have you seen Cherry 2000, Tom?
No, I had not heard of it until Bob brought it up.
It's really good.
Yeah, I gotta check. See, this is why I love it. People call in, I'm hearing about stuff I've never even heard of.
Yeah, 312-981-7200. We got anti-Valentine's Day movies here. 312 area code texts in. Nobody says I love you on Valentine's Day like Patrick Bateman. My pick is American Psycho. That's Steve. That's a great choice.
Yeah.
That's a great choice. I love that movie. I love, love, love that movie. And Bale is unbelievable in it. Mm-hmm. And it was such a surprise. I've talked about this before. I despise that book. Despised it, threw it across the room. I hated it so much. And then I loved the movie. I thought the movie was great. So, Huey Lewis never sounds the same, though, anymore.
I just love the speech he gives. Yeah. He's like, I like his late period work.
Yeah. And by the way, the dance he does as he's getting ready to.
When he's doing hip to be square.
Yeah. As he's getting ready to chop Jared Leto into bits.
Hey, Paul! Meanwhile, Jared Leto is completely unaware of the fact that he's being surrounded by newspaper.
Yeah.
And he's wearing like a plastic suit.
It's such a funny movie. You know, that's the thing about it. They took, you know, because I thought the book was horrendous and like almost like pornography in the way that it was written in terms of the violence, and it wasn't funny at all. They made the movie a comedy. You know, it took a couple of women. That's the other thing is that. You know, a woman directed that movie, and the book is insanely misogynistic. And then they made a great black comedy out of it. I was surprised. I was really, that was one of those, you know when you walk into a movie and you have expectations, and then you're like genuinely, completely, unbelievably surprised by it? American Psycho falls into that category. Nick DiGilio show here on 720 WGN. It's the Anti-Valentine's Day show. We do this every year. We're talking about Anti-Valentine's Day movies. If you would like to join us, it's 312-981-7200. 779 area code. Oh, here we go. Blue Valentine. Oh, my God. That movie. Ryan Gosling, Michelle Williams. Did I ever tell you how the first time I saw that movie?
I don't think so.
It was during screener season. So I had a screener of it.
Oh, wasn't it? Yeah, go ahead.
I was cohabitating with my ex-wife, you know, which we did for 6 months while we were, I was looking for another place to live. So I was confined to the extra bedroom. So I spent my time just in the bedroom, staying away from her, using the bathroom when she wasn't around, going into the kitchen, grabbing something and leaving, going back into the room. I spent a lot of time in that room watching TV, watching movies, drinking whiskey is pretty much how I spent those months. So I was in that situation, headlong into that situation, probably 3 months in. 3 months into it. And I watched I watched Blue Valentine in that room during that time period. And I was destroyed by it. It was my favorite film that year. I was destroyed by that movie. If you've not seen it, it's unbelievable. It is an unbelievably heartbreaking movie and a perfect choice for Anti-Valentine's Day. You've seen Blue Valentine, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Just the once.
Yeah, I've seen it several times.
That's on my list of movies that I probably don't need to watch ever again.
Yeah.
Like Requiem for a Dream.
Well, that's top on my list.
Yeah. Probably don't ever need to watch that again. Passion of the Christ. Probably don't ever need to watch that.
Yeah, I've only seen Passion of the Christ once. Yeah, it's a terrific movie.
But I know, that gave me the experience, and I'm like, all right, cool.
I wanted to kill Darren Aronofsky at the end of Requiem for that last 15 minutes of that movie. I just wanted to kill him. I was like, what are you doing? You know? I mean, even for Aronofsky, the last 15 minutes of that movie is too much. We're talking about Darren Aronofsky, you know, who made Mother. I mean, still, my favorite is my dad's reaction to that when it ended, when Mother ended. Well, that was something. 312 says, I spit on your grave. I can't do it. I'm fascinated by Joe Bob Briggs' brilliant take on that movie, but I can't do it.
I could listen to him talk about that movie all day. I don't ever want to see that movie again. I don't ever want to see it again.
Yeah.
He is a scholar
in
that sort of thing, and he makes an amazing argument.
He does.
I will never watch that movie again.
No, I've only seen it the one time when it came out in the theaters. And when it came out, it became a sensation. One of the reasons why it became a sensation, Tom, Siskel and Ebert. Because they went way out of their way to talk about how horrible it was. It was the worst movie ever. And as a result of that, people went to see it. And I think Siskel and Ebert were responsible for at least half of the reason why people went to see it and why it made so much money. I remember I saw it at the Luna Theater, which used to be at Belmont just east of Cicero. And that was the theater. I told you about this theater before. That was the theater that didn't have doors to the auditorium. They had curtains. So you could hear the popcorn. You could hear people in the lobby. And then they had like video games in there at one point, pinball machines. You could hear that. So you had to sit really close to the screen. I saw I Spit on Your Grave at the Luna, and they actually advertised it in the newspaper, quoting Siskel and Ebert, worst movie ever made. That's how they advertised it.
You know, they made a direct sequel last year.
I know they made a remake.
Yeah, Mirzachi made a direct sequel that came out last year.
Oh, I didn't know that.
In April.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's called I Spit on Your Grave, Deja Vu.
Not seen it. Don't know if I want to.
Probably don't need to.
Yeah. I saw the remake, which was not good. But, you know, Joe Bob Briggs, they did a screening of it at Flashback. They screened I Spit on Your Grave, and he live commentary during it. So he was in the room with a mic talking about the movie as it was playing. And I went in and I watched about 10 minutes just because I wanted to hear Joe Bob Briggs. And then I was like, I can't watch this movie anymore. I mean, essentially, if you don't know what I Spit on Your Grave is, it's a woman played by Camille Keaton is brutally attacked, beaten and raped for about 45 minutes. And then the rest of the movie is her seeking revenge on these guys. That's essentially all it is. The original title of the movie was called Day of the Woman. But it's unflinching. I mean, it's seriously 45 minutes of beating and raping. And it is brutal. 708 says, how about Sleeping with the Enemy with Julia Roberts? I love that movie. I love that movie. 779, Blue Valentine. Yes.
You're going to see that at least three times.
Exactly. I think that's going to pop up a bunch of times. Anybody who's seen that movie. And Fatal Attraction. That's a great choice. That's a great choice to watch on Valentine's Day, especially if you own a rabbit. I don't mean the car. I mean the actual bunny. But yeah, Fatal Attraction. Have you ever seen the original ending?
A Fatal Attraction? No.
Yeah. Because she kills herself.
Yeah.
And he has his fingerprints are on the knife that she kills herself with. Mm-hmm. So he ends up going to jail, which of course makes sense because he needs comeuppance. But people hated it so much and they hated her so much. That's why they have Ann Archer Shooter at the end. 773, hey, Nick and crew. St. Valentine's Day Massacre with Jason Robards, fantastic movie. Yeah, that's another way. That's another angle is to watch some mob movies on Valentine's Day. St. Valentine's Day Massacre is fantastic. 861 says, hey, how about Valentine? In 2001, I don't know what's that.
It was like a slasher from 2001. Literally,
it was just called Valentine.
Yeah,
I don't remember it. It was just lost in the mist of all the other slasher movies that came out.
I suppose so.
I don't remember. Is anybody in it?
I'll have to take a look.
Okay, and it's just called Valentine. It's not like a My Bloody Valentine thing. It's
nope.
Just a slasher movie. Does it take place on Valentine's Day? I would imagine so, right?
Denise Richards, David Boreanaz.
Uh-huh.
Katherine Heigl, Jessica Capshaw. That's
okay.
Weird.
Yeah. Okay. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It's the Anti-Valentine's Day show, the annual Anti-Valentine's Day show. We're going through Anti-Valentine's Day movies. We'll do music, and we'll take your calls and your stories at 312-981-7200. Also, beef jerky and beef stick taste test is coming up. Stay tuned on 720 WGN. Lovely song by the Hall and the Oates.
My favorite singer, Hall and Oates.
Hall and Oates. Love
First
that guy.
First name Holland, last name Oates.
It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here until 4 a.m. And it is the annual Anti-Valentine's Day show. And we're talking about Anti-Valentine's Day movies. What are some unbelievably inappropriate movies to watch on this romantic of all holidays? 312-981-7200 for talk and text. All right, how about Heathers? Here's what they say about Heathers. Conceived as an angry reaction against the dominant John Hughes high school comedy model of the time, 1988's Heathers is also a wonderfully macabre twist on the romantic comedy, which hasn't lost its sting 30 years later. Winona Ryder, in her first leading role after her big break in Beetlejuice, is Veronica, a popular girl thanks to her association with the elite clique of the Heathers, so-called because all of them, aside from Veronica, have the same first name. However, Veronica is quickly losing patience with their backstabbing, superficial ways. Enter Christian Slater as J.D., the enigmatic new kid at school, and a walking bad boy cliche with his long black coat and motorcycle. Bewitched, Veronica happily gets swept up in a whirlwind romance with this exciting stranger, but finds out too late that he's completely psychotic and is manipulating her into him murder the bullies and that rule their school. Heathers has always been most noted as a biting satire on life as a high school student, frequently cited as an influence on many teen comedies like Drop Dead Gorgeous and Mean Girls. However, it's also a dark anecdote to your standard movie romance, questioning the validity of love at first sight and demonstrating how easy it is to lose sight of oneself, one's better judgment when you get caught up in the fog of infatuation. I love Heathers. I love that movie.
That is an all-timer for me.
Yeah.
Especially because when I was growing up, I actually really hated John Hughes movies. I really, really hated them. Mm-hmm. I was not like you. I did not like Ferris Bueller. I didn't get it. I didn't like The Breakfast Club. I didn't like 16 Candles. I didn't like Pretty in Pink. I thought they were all really, really stupid.
Yeah.
So when I saw Heathers, it was all the aesthetic
of
the John Hughes movie and just this the darkest sense of humor possible.
Yeah.
And I think it's genius, probably better than anything John Hughes ever did.
Yeah. I mean, the only John Hughes movie that I really, really love is I love The Breakfast Club.
And I've come around
on that. I love
that
movie.
I've definitely come around on The Breakfast Club. But
the rest of them,
it's fine.
I can't do the rest of them.
Especially 16 Candles. I think that the horrible message.
It's unbelievable. All the Long Duck Dong stuff is just completely insane that exists. I back The Breakfast Club.
Breakfast Club deserves a place.
There are moments in it that are, you know, that are like a little John Hughes-y that you just go, ugh.
Like the dancing?
That's ridiculous. You know,
I don't think he really
Emilio Estevez going into the room, slamming the door, screaming, and the window shatters. Like, what is that? But there's material in it that gets into that John Hughes world that's really uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't hate Some Kind of Wonderful, mm-hmm. Even though it's Pretty in Pink with the roles reversed. Mm-hmm. And the reason I don't hate Some Kind of Wonderful is because it's my ex-wife's favorite movie, and she knows every line of it. And I'm not kidding. Every single line, every pause, we would watch it, and I would watch her because she would just she did not miss a beat. I don't know how many times she's seen it. I mean, she's seen it enough to know every single line of dialogue, every beat, and perform along with the movie. I would watch her. She'd watch the movie, and I'd be like watching my ex-wife just not missing a beat, knowing every single pause and beat. And it's just was ridiculous. So I kind of grew to like that movie. And I love Mary Stuart Masterson.
Yeah. Who's the principal from The Breakfast Club?
Principal from The Breakfast Club?
Yeah.
Well, he's not a principal. He's a teacher.
It's Paul Gleason. Paul Gleason.
Yeah.
He's the best part of that movie.
He's great.
You want another one?
He's great.
I got you right here. That's two more.
Yeah. He does two months. I got 2 months. I got you for two months.
You mess with the bull, son. You're going to get the horns.
Get the horn. Paul Gleason. Paul Gleason is like the best part of a lot of movies. Paul Gleason. Sure. Paul Gleason Trading Places. Paul Gleason in Trading Places.
Come on now.
We're in Hell's Beaks.
I can't get past Judd Nelson. Yeah. Yeah, give me another one.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Like, that's too funny.
You know that almost was John Cusack. John Bender was almost John Cusack. So, but yeah, let's see. Here is Mark on WGN. Hi, Mark.
Greetings from Cleveland. Hello. I got a good anti-Valentine's Day movie for you.
All right.
Yeah, there's this lesbian vampire movie that you might have at least heard of because Tarantino gave it a shout-out in Kill Bill.
Yeah.
The Blood-Spattered Bride.
Yeah, I know that movie. Yeah.
Yeah, can I tell people about real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so you have this confused young woman who's enduring a less than ideal honeymoon with her brutish, abusive husband. And it turns out that the husband is related to Carmela, the famous lesbian vampire, and soon she shows up to save the wife, and the two women are soon dividing their time between having loud sex at a ruined church in the woods and chasing the husband and his pals around with daggers, and they retaliate with shotguns and animal traps, and it just becomes a literal battle of the sexes.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's out there. It's available. You can get it on the DVD if you'd like to watch that.
It just came out on Blu-ray with commentary and stuff, and it's just a wonderfully insane movie.
Okay, The Blood-Spattered Bride. All right, Mark, thanks.
Have a great show.
Okay, thank you. You ever see that one, The Blood-Splattered Bride?
I have not seen it, no. I'll have to check it out.
I've heard it. I've heard of it. I have not seen it, though. Bunch of texts are coming in. I would say the fourth segment of Tales from the Dark Side is a great anti-Valentine's Day watch. What is that? What's the fourth segment of Tales from the Dark Side? Because I remember they made a movie out of it. And I love it when they call a movie the movie, because it was called Tales from the Dark Side, the movie.
The movie.
Yeah.
It's called Lover's Vow.
Okay.
Or said the fourth segment?
Fourth segment of Tales from the Dark Side is great anti-Valentine's Day watch, says the 331
Tales
area
from the Dark
code.
Side. It says that there's only three stories.
Okay.
One of them is called Lover's Vow, and it stars James Remar.
Oh, the great James Remar.
Yeah.
You got to love James Remar.
Yeah.
From the Warriors? He's Ajax in the Warriors.
Love it.
He's Gans, and he's Gans in 48 Hours, Remar. Great actor. 815 says, how about what's love got to do with it? Not much of a love story. Angela Bassett is so good in that movie. But actually, so both of them are unbelievable in that movie. Lawrence Fishburne and Angela Bassett. It's the Tina Turner. It's the story of Tina Turner and, you know, her relationship with Ike and what a bastard he was. And they're both. Those are two remarkable performances. Those are, you know, they're both unbelievable in that movie. It's a really terrific movie, too. Here's one. 847 area code, War of the Roses. And here's what they say about it. I love War of the Roses. I actually screened it for my film club a few years ago for Valentine's Day. I love War of the Roses. I absolutely love that movie. When Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner reunited on screen for the third time, along with their Romancing the Stone and Jewel of the Nile co-star Danny DeVito, audiences could have been forgiven for expecting another feel-good rom-com adventure. 1989's War of the Roses, however, is an altogether different proposition. The film, also directed by DeVito, is an adaptation of the 1981 novel by Warren Adler and centers on wealthy couple Oliver and Barbara Rose, whose seemingly idyllic marriage masks a deep-set mutual contempt. In many respects, War of the Roses is like a feature-length version of You're My Little Choochie Face sequence from Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, as Oliver and Barbara's hatred for one another intensifies. So too do their attempts to murder one another. The fact that the actors in question were at the time regarded as two of the premier sex symbols in Hollywood and had played off nicely against one another in the past only makes the downward spiral more effective and darkly funny. As the movie's original poster Riley declared, once in a lifetime comes a motion picture that makes you feel like falling in love all over again. This is not that movie. The Crush from 1993. Oh, I remember that. Who was in that? Look that one up, Tom. The Crush from 1993. Play Misty for me. Those are stalker psycho chick movies. Yeah, Play Misty for me. the directorial debut, if I'm not mistaken, of Clint Eastwood. But The Crush, I can't remember who the psycho was in that. Was it Alicia Silverstone?
Yes, Alicia okay. Silverstone and Carrie Elwes. Directed by Alan Shapiro.
Yeah. Okay. 847 says, I hope they serve beer in hell. I love it. My wife can't stand it. Melanie from Ottawa says, my anti-Valentine's Day movie is, of course, My Bloody Valentine. 708 says, would Harold and Maude be a contender? I think Harold and Maude is quite a lovely movie, actually.
Yeah, it's just got a dark sense of humor.
Yeah.
kid obsessed with death.
218 says, Mother, the Darren Aronofsky, aforementioned Darren Aronofsky movie, where he basically just puts Jennifer Lawrence through hell. Eternal Sunshine. Oh. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. They say great laugh, that movie. Oh, yeah, it's hilarious. That's a great choice for anti-Valentine's Day. That's a heartbreaking movie.
It's a really interesting premise. You know, what if you could erase the memories of your ex?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like Total Recall.
I saw that movie when I was going through a really bad breakup, Eternal Sunshine. So it had a massively huge, powerful effect on me because I was going through a terrible breakup. Like, one of the worst breaks I've ever gone through. And Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind comes out like right in the middle of it. 708 says, a depressing movie for Valentine's Day would be Seven with Brad Pitt. It's a good choice. That's a lovely movie to watch on Valentine's Day. 309 area code says, hey, Nick, what about the 1976 film Lipstick? Oh, that's a great choice. That's a solid example of, you know, a grimy 70s revenge thriller. Just an exploitative revenge movie that were so good and so popular in the 70s. Yeah, Lipstick. That's a great choice. A great choice. All right. What do you think? 312-981-7200. The Anti-Valentine's Day show continues here, and we would love to hear from you. What are your choices? We're talking anti-Valentine's Day movies. So 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And we will continue with the Anti-Valentine's Day show right here on 720 WGN on the Nick DiGiulio Show. Yeah, Anti-Valentine's Day show continues here on 720 WGN. We'd love to hear from you, 312-981-7200. What culture put together a list of the movies that they think are probably the most inappropriate to watch on Valentine's Day, anti-Valentine's Day movies. And we would love to hear your choices here, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. In the article, they mentioned Closer. Which is a great, again, another great, great choice. You've seen Closer, right?
Natalie Portman, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Portman, Julia Roberts, mm-hmm. Judd Law, Clive Owen.
Mike Nichols. Yeah.
Audiences were lured in by the sexy cast and the premise of some full-on raunchy behavior. However, 2004's Closer is, in fact, a devastatingly downbeat examination of relationships and sexuality. Less likely to leave couples in the mood than it is to leave them questioning the strength of their bond. Plot-wise, it's a little bit tricky to surmise, set as it is over the course of a number of years and following the complicated relationship of Jude Law's writer, Julia Roberts' photographer, Clive Owen's dermatologist, and Natalie Portman's stripper, all of whom wind up in some scene cheating on one another with one other. While much has been made of the sexual frankness of Patrick Marber's script, which was adapted from the stage play, this comes from not explicit representations of sexual activity, but from the often startlingly blunt dialogue. When its affluent London high society setting may be alienating and off-putting to many of us, there's no denying that director Mike Nichols' film is handsomely photographed and very well acted. Not for nothing did Clive Owen and Natalie Portman bag Golden Globes for their performances. Even so, given its ruminations on romance and the nature of the sexual urge, it's certainly not go-to feel-good viewing for lovebirds. So, that's a really great movie. 630 says the movie with Mark Wahlberg is the psycho ex-boyfriend.
Fear.
That's a great movie.
I just picture him where he's hitting him.
Yeah. It's a great movie.
There's a, I can't remember, I want to say it was a sitcom or something where they say this girl decides that she's going to make it look like this dude she's crushing on.
Yeah.
It's like, oh no, she's doing the fear thing. She's doing the fear thing. Yeah. Like, it's just freaking out.
And that was directed by a really terrific director, James Foley. And it was Reese Witherspoon, right?
Let's see.
Reese Witherspoon.
William Peterson.
William Peterson's great.
He's awesome.
He's great.
Chicago man right there.
Yeah. And that was when Alyssa Milano was in that movie. That was the first time I was like, oh, Alyssa Milano has grown up. She is no longer the daughter on Who's the Boss. That was when the first time I ever noticed Alyssa Milano was like, whoa. Yeah, Fear. That's a great anti-Valentine's Day movie. Here's Joe on WGN. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Nick. Hey. What do you think about Leaving Las Vegas? Oh. That's one that'll really tug at your heartstrings, huh?
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good anti-Valentine's Day movie. That'll get you very, you'll be very happy after watching that one. My God.
Yeah, that's probably the most depressing movie I've probably ever seen.
It's one of the most depressing movies ever made. It really is.
Yeah.
It really is. It's a good one, though. It's a good one.
Oh, yeah, Cage was really good in it. He's great. You know, I kind of enjoyed it, you know.
Yeah. All right, Joe.
You know, grab myself this way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, all right, Joe, take care.
Bye.
I remember for the first time I saw Leaving Las Vegas. And that's another one that you don't need to see several times. I think once is pretty much enough. The first time I saw Leaving Las Vegas, the first thing I said afterwards was like, I need a drink.
But didn't you just watch a movie about how they will destroy, you know?
Yeah, no, but that's the thing. But
that's
when it was
messed up thing.
I know. When it was over, I was like, man, I need a drink. The complete opposite of what the movie's trying to say. Here's Mike on WGN. Hey, Mike.
Yeah, hi there. I'm surprised nobody's mentioned it yet. It's not only an anti-Valentine's Day movie, it's very much anti-romance, A Clockwork Orange.
Oh, sure. Clockwork Orange. Yeah. Yep.
One of my favorite movies. How did it strike you?
It's a great movie. I loved it. I saw it at a very young age. I saw it at an inappropriately young age, Clockwork Orange. I was, I'm not kidding. I was like, I was probably 11 when I saw Clockwork Orange.
How'd you get away with that? Into the theater?
No. They re-released it in the theaters, and I went. I saw it was 11 when I saw Clockwork Orange for the first time. So, all right, Mike, thanks.
Naughty boy.
Yeah, well, you know, I saw a lot of inappropriate movies when I was a kid. There's no question about it. I always go back to the big example. I was 8 when my dad took me to see The Exorcist. 8. How old were you when you saw The Exorcist for the first time, Tom?
Oh, man, I was high school.
You were high school?
Yeah. Yeah. Clockwork Orange was I was early high school because I got really into Kubrick. I was like, that's when I started like devouring Roger Ebert's The Great Movies and everything. Yeah. I was so obsessed my dad was like, oh, you want to see a movie? Oh, you want to see a movie, do you, Tommy? You want to see a movie?
Yeah.
Here's a movie.
Yeah.
And I was traumatized afterward. I really was. I felt very empty inside. I was like, wow, that's so great. Yeah. Thanks, Dad.
Clockwork
Love you,
Orange.
Too.
Clockwork Orange. Thanks, Mike. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here is Roosevelt on WGN. Hi, Roosevelt.
Hey, Nick, I got two of your favorites.
All right.
Tales from the Crypt and Trilogy of Terror.
Yeah. Tales from the Crypt, one of my favorite anthology movies of all time. My favorite segment is my favorite segment, obviously, is the Peter Cushing.
Yeah, what about the one with the other one with Terry Thomas?
Yeah, that's Vault of Horror.
Yeah, well, but isn't it called, what is it called?
It's called Vault of Horror.
Are you sure it's not called Tales from the Crypt?
No, Tales from the Crypt is the one with Peter Cushing. Vault of Horror is the one with Terry Thomas.
Oh, I got him confused then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thanks, Roosevelt.
Thanks.
Yeah. Those were at that time when the British anthology movies were coming out in the 70s, early 70s. And the best of which is Tales from the Crypt. That's the best. All the stories in Tales from the Crypt are great. They're all great. The last one where this jerk takes over the school for the blind, the home for the blind, cuts off their heat, feeds them slop, has a big crazy German Shepherd that scares the hell out of the blind guys. A couple of blind guys die. So they take his dog and they lock it in a room and they don't feed it. Have you seen this movie? And yeah. And then they put together like this, they have him locked up in the room next to the dog, and you hear them, you know, like building stuff. That's all you see. And then finally they open the door and he has to walk through like a maze and a hallway that's lined, a thin hallway that's lined with razor blades on either side. So he's got to make it through the hallway with the razor blades. He cuts his hand a couple of times. He finally gets through. He gets through. He turns the corner. He walks down at the end of the maze. They open the door, and there's the dog who's not been fed and mistreated, who is about to attack and eat the guy who owns the dog. He turns and runs, and then he realizes that it's either the dog's going to eat him or he's got to run through the razor blade hallway. And then they turn the lights out. Blind Alleys, it was the name of that story.
Oh, jeez.
It's so good. And that was the final story. That's what you left with. Like, that was the last story. And then they all end up, the people who are, you know, the stories are being told by Ralph Richardson. They're in this crypt, and they leave it. They were on a guided tour, and they left the tour, the five people that have, including Joan Collins, the five people that have stories. And then they end up falling into hell at the end.
As you do.
That's the thing.
As you tend to do.
They fall into a pit of hell, flames all over the place. And the final shot is Ralph Richardson saying, "Who's next?" And he looks right into the camera. "Perhaps you." It's a great movie. All right, another suggestion, Body of Evidence. Do you ever see Body of Evidence with Willem Dafoe and Madonna?
Yeah.
It's such a terrible movie.
It's not very good, but it is anti-Valentine's.
Yeah, it certainly is. That came out like when Madonna, she had that in the movie theaters. And it's, you know, it's one of those erotic thriller sex movies, you know, very much in the vein of like your Fatal Attractions and all that other stuff. So Madonna's naked in it. And that was at the same time, her sex book was out. You familiar with her sex book?
What, like the Madonna Sutra? Like what is what
no,
is
it's
it?
Called Sex.
Oh, it's just called Sex.
Yeah.
She's telling you how to how
No,
to
it's
do
a
it,
it's a
what?
Photography book with her doing all kinds of stuff. Including stuff with Vanilla Ice.
Wow.
Oh yeah.
Was that post Cool as Ice?
Oh yeah. Yeah. This came out, you know, his heyday was like 90.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and 91 is when Cool as Ice came out. This came out in like 93. So it's a couple of years after. But I bought it, and she came out with it, with the album was Erotica. Mm. And so, like, and she was, by the time Body of Evidence came out, people were like, "Look, I'm sick of seeing Madonna naked. I can't."
Can you imagine being at that point in your life where you're just like, you know what, Madonna, put some clothes
yeah,
on.
No, but that's what happened. That's exactly what happened. Nobody went to see Body of Evidence. I mean, it's a terrible movie, but it was like, Madonna, come on.
Yeah.
Really? Calm down a little bit. Put a pair of pants on. I mean,
you know, as a great movie poster once told me, when a girl has a heart of stone, there's only one way to melt it.
Oh.
Just add ice.
Just add ice. Yeah. Cool as ice.
Cool as ice.
Yeah. A box office bomb. Body of Evidence, the erotic thriller genre was a serious cash cow by the mid-90s. While such 1980 hits as 9.5 Weeks and Fatal Attraction helped pave the way, it was Basic Instinct that really blew the doors wide open. From that point on, nothing was hotter in Hollywood than a sexed-up murder mystery which required its stars to be naked a lot. Of course, the more these increasingly absurd and overblown films flounced their alleged eroticism, the more ridiculous and fragrantly unsexy they became, until the 1-2 punch of striptease and showgirls pretty much killed the format in the multiplexes. However, the writing was already on the wall with Body of Evidence, the first major attempt to out-sleaze Basic Instinct, which casts Madonna as a femme fatale charged with the murder of her lover, an older and wealthier man, obviously, after he died during intercourse with her. So, there it is, Body of Evidence. So, all right, we've got a few more of these. We want to hear from you. The phone lines are open. The text lines are open. Completely inappropriate movies to watch on Valentine's Day. Anti-Valentine's Day movies. As the Anti-Valentine's Day Nick DiGilio show continues.
No, 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 it ain't me, babe. It ain't me you're looking for, babe.
Nick DiGilio show continues here on 720 WGN on this Friday morning, Valentine's Day. And it's our annual anti-Valentine's Day show, and we would love to hear from you, talk or text. Currently, we're talking about anti-Valentine's Day movies, 312-981-7200. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right. Let's see. Here are some more. How about the loved ones? For many, a great many years, Hollywood has been selling teenagers the dream of the perfect prom night, another supposed rite of passage for teenagers, which has become so prominent in the popular consciousness that even schools in countries that never used to, including the UK, have adopted the custom. Of course, Hollywood has shown us how the prom night dream can rapidly turn sour, most famously in Carrie. However, the 2009 Australian horror The Loved Ones gives us perhaps the most unsettling and eerily plausible vision of the lengths one unhinged girl and her doting father will go for her dream of being the queen of the high school dance. Robin McLeavy is Lola, a social outcast who longs for romance and popularity. But when she's not forthcoming, she takes a somewhat unorthodox approach to fulfill her desires, abducting her dream boy, Brent, for the purposes of a dance in her home, with hideous torture ensuing if things don't go the way she wants them to. The feature debut of writer-director Sean Byrne, The Loved Ones, very much fit with the torture porn horror wave of the 2000s, but with just enough satirical jet black humor to set it apart. Yeah, that's a pretty brutal movie. Pretty brutal. Bunch of texts have come in, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for anti-Valentine's Day movies. 3779 area code, the classic Kramer versus Kramer. Speaking of movies about divorce, my favorite of that genre is Shoot the Moon with Albert Finney and Diane Keaton, Peter Weller, Karen Allen. That movie devastates me. I mean, I remember the first time I saw it, I couldn't get up afterwards. I was just like, whoa. And it's got such an amazing ending, that final shot. It goes one way or the other. Some people hate that ending. I love it. And the acting in it is just beyond good. I mean, I think it's Diane Keaton's best performance ever. My favorite Albert Finney performance. Karen Allen's fantastic. Peter Weller. Everybody. The kids. All the kids are great. The late great Dana Hill, fantastic as the oldest daughter. It's a great movie. If you've not seen Shoot the Moon, it's completely appropriate for what we're talking about now. It's definitely an anti Valentine's Day movie, and easily the best movie ever made about divorce. But Marriage Story. There's another one we could recommend. Everybody watch Marriage Story today. It's out there. You can watch it. It's on the Netflix. That's a nice romantic night. Oh, honey, let's watch Marriage Story. It's got a nice title. 309 says, Looking for Mr. Goodbar is a great movie. There's another one. That's a hard one to watch more than once.
I'm guessing that it has nothing to do with finding the candy.
No. Have you not seen Looking for Mr. Goodbar?
No, I've not seen.
Oh, man. Speaking of Diane Keaton, it's a great movie. It's a great movie. It's one of those movies that you'll only watch once. We were talking about, you know, movies that are good, but I never want to watch them ever again. Looking for Mr. Goodbar is like that. But Diane Keaton is great in it. Introduced the world, I believe it introduced the world to Richard Gere. I know Tom Berenger is in it.
Tuesday Weld.
And
Richard Kelly.
Yeah.
William Atherton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great movie. 773 says, there's nothing like a mother's love. How about Psycho? Yeah. Psycho's a nice romantic movie. when was the last time you've seen Psycho?
October.
Yeah. Oh, you watched it
Watch it every October.
Yeah. For the Halloween month.
Yep.
Yeah, great movie, obviously. It goes without saying. 773 says, Misery. Misery. You know, that was a big comeback for James Caan. Yeah. Kathy Bates won the Oscar for that.
She did.
For hobbling James Caan. That scene is ridiculous.
The whole thing is crazy.
Yeah.
The whole thing is insane.
You know, it's hard to believe Rob Reiner directed that movie. You know what I mean? And there was a time when Rob Reiner was directing, like, really good movies, and now he hasn't made a good one in years. I mean, it's been a long time since Rob Reiner directed a good movie. But there was a stretch there where he was doing great stuff.
Well, I mean, Harry Met Sally, Stand By Me.
Not a fan of that one, but...
A Few Good Men,
Stand By Me.
Misery, Princess Bride, Spinal Tap.
Spinal Tap.
Yeah.
But, I mean, lately, oof. His output has been bad.
Yeah, I can't think of anything he's really made. He made LBJ.
Not good.
The Bucket List.
Oh. No.
Shock and Awe.
Yeah, Shock and Awe. Which was about, it's a newspaper movie where they're covering the first Iraq war. And it's awful. It's just all speechifying. Despite the fact that it's got an amazing cast. It was terrible.
Oh, well.
815 says, best flippin' Valentine's movie ever is Antichrist with Willem Dafoe. There's another movie that I would never watch again. That director, what's his name?
Lars von Trier.
Yeah, no, he make all of his movies are one viewing, and that's it.
Yeah, him and, like, Michael Haneke.
Yeah. 617, oh, Hard Candy with the great Ellen Page. 864, Disclosure from 1994. That movie was ridiculous. Demi Moore was hot in it, though, I got to say. It was Michael Douglas. Yeah, Michael Douglas made like 8 of those movies. You know, he Basic Instinct, Fatal Attraction. Michael Douglas was the king of the erotic thriller for a long stretch of time. 708 says, how about Unfaithful with Richard Gere? I love that movie. You know, Diane Lane is phenomenal in that movie. She's great in that movie. And then who was that hunky French dude? He was supposed to be the guy she has the affair with. Who Richard Gere caves his skull in. I remember he was supposed to be like the big deal. I can't remember his name, but he was like, you know, sexy French guy.
I'm trying to figure out.
Who directed
Oliver Martinez?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, he was supposed to be the...
Or Olivier.
Olivier Martinez. He was supposed to be the new thing. He was supposed to be... And I think he made 2 movies. Well, who directed that? Was it Adrian Lyne?
Yeah, Adrian. Yeah. Is it Lyne or Lyne?
Lyne.
Oh, yeah. Adrian Lyne.
Yeah.
Doesn't he only pretty much just make erotic thrillers, for, like, Flashdance and Jacob's Ladder?
Yeah. That's pretty much what all he did for you know, for a good period of time. He did 9.5 weeks, if I'm not mistaken.
He did?
Yeah.
And he's doing Deep Water, which is coming out later this year, with Ben Affleck and Ana de Armas, Tracy Letts.
Yeah. Oh, the great Tracy Letts. Mm-hmm. All right. They say Hellraiser is a great anti-Valentine's Day movie.
Yeah, the story of that.
Hellraiser's fantastic.
It's bonkers.
It's a great movie. There are a couple of Hellraiser movies that I enjoy. Not all of them, because there's like 20 of them, right?
Yeah. There's like, I think 1 through 3 are pretty much good. Like, yeah, if you watch Hellraiser 1, 2, and 3, you've pretty much seen everything that Hellraiser has to offer.
Yeah. But yeah, Hellraiser, that's an interesting choice for an anti-Valentine's Day movie.
Well, it's all about lust.
Yeah.
It's all about the crossroads between pain and lust.
Do you have a favorite Cenobite? I like the chomping guy. I like that
chattery dude. I call him Pinhead.
Well, yeah. I mean,
I can't, you know, the rest of them are cool and everything. The fat one really freaks me out.
The fat one's awesome.
Butterball?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fat one's awesome. Doesn't he have like goggles on?
Yeah, he's got goggles on. He's just so morbidly obese. He can barely move.
The Cenobites. Hellraiser.
Yeah.
The great Clive Barker.
Interesting guy.
Yeah. No. Yeah, absolutely. So number 2 on their list of the most inappropriate movies to watch on Valentine's Day, anti-Valentine's Day movies, Taxi Driver.
Absolutely. Takes her on the worst date, Sybil Shepherd, on like the worst date of all time.
Takes her to a porno movie, buys her a Kris Kristofferson record that she already has.
Which is worse?
What?
Which is the worst part of that? Taking her to the porno?
Taking her to the porno movies.
I don't know. I'd hate to have an extra copy of Kris. I mean, I've already got the one.
Yeah.
Who needs 2 Kris Kristofferson records?
Yeah. I love Taxi Driver. I love that movie. And it is absolutely my favorite Scorsese movie. And Scorsese obviously has made many, many great films, but that one's my favorite. It's the best portrayal of loneliness ever put on film. And De Niro, I mean, please. Jody, everybody in it is just great. Albert Brooks is fantastic. But yeah, it's not an easy movie to watch. It's certainly not. Well, they say the number one anti-Valentine's Day movie to watch, and I got to say, this is a great choice. They say Vertigo, which is my favorite Alfred Hitchcock movie. Mm-hmm. And Jimmy Stewart is so great in that movie, and it's a movie about obsession. It's also a movie essentially where Alfred Hitchcock is admitting that he's nuts. It's the most personal. Yeah. It's the most personal movie Alfred Hitchcock has ever made.
Well, he's just straight up admitting, he's like, yeah, there's a reason that all of my movies are populated by blonde, steely blue eyed girls.
Yeah,
they're all the same.
And how
he's got an obsession.
And how I would treat them terribly on set and be obsessed with them.
Yep.
So, all right. Well, there you go. Anti Valentine's Day movies. Okay. The news is coming up, and then I'm going to bust out some jerky treats. We got some beef jerky and some beef sticks. Well, they're not beef. They're all kinds of different exotic meats. So we're going to do a taste test. We like to do taste tests here on the show. And this morning we're going to be doing the taste test of the meat sticks. Just got to love that. You just have to love that term, meat sticks. That was my radio name in college. Yeah, meat sticks. All right. The news is coming up. Yeah. The Nick DiGiulio Show continues. It's our annual anti-Valentine's Day show. We're going to talk about anti-Valentine's Day songs. We did the movies. Now we're going to talk about breakup songs. We've been playing a bunch of them. Tom, you've been playing some classic anti-Valentine's Day songs. And we also have a list of them that we're going to go through. But one of my favorite listeners, well, you're all my favorite listeners, but Deanna, who is a regular listener of the show, likes to give. She's a giver. And she sometimes sends really cool stuff to us at the station here. Tom has gotten some great stuff, and so has Vic, who's, by the way, is off this morning, as you can hear Schwani's filling in. And she sent me some great stuff. She sent me an anti-Valentine's Day bouquet of fake flowers, but in the vase, along with the flowers, were a bunch of meat sticks of different varieties, jerkies and meat sticks and stuff. Tom, you've seen it. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's a remarkable variety, I'll say that much.
Yeah. So I figured I'd do a little taste test on the air of some of these. I mean, these are just, you know, very exotic meats. So I've got a few here. Do a little taste test. I'll tell you which ones are good. And they're all from a... Maybe you can look this up online. Look up the company online. Buffalo Bob's. These are all meat sticks from the company Buffalo Bob's.
Yeah, Buffalo Bob's Jerky Dynasty.
That's what it's called? Jerky Dynasty?
Yeah. Yeah. Old World Sausage and Meat.
Oh, you gotta love that.
This is remarkable.
Yeah. So, That's if you want to. Is it just buffalobobs.com?
Well, it's on jerkydynasty.com. So Buffalo Bob's, you could just get a bunch of jerky from this website, Jerky Dynasty, and then they have, you can get specifically Buffalo Bob's.
Okay.
So they've got, wow, kangaroo jerky, alligator, ostrich.
Yeah.
Wild boar.
Yeah, well, here's what we got. Let me go through. I'll do the first one. If you wanna pull from some of this stuff, let me know. Remember the when Kramer was a seat filler at the Tonys?
Yeah,
and he offers the people next to him some jerky, and then he pulls the jerky and slams the guy's head in the back. Okay, so this first one is alligator.
Oh, gator jerky,
and it's Cajun style. Alligator Cajun style. So I'll take a little bite from that. And this is not a jerky. This is actually a stick, like a Slim Jim stick. Alligator Cajun style. Here we go.
Brought to you by Amos Moses.
That's right. Okay. Yeah.
What are you getting? What kind of notes are you getting here?
It's spicy because it's Cajun.
Good. That's what we hope for.
The texture is very Slim Jimmy.
Yeah.
It tastes like a little like spicy. The texture is a little bit different. Mm. It's pretty spicy. There's a back end on it. You know what I mean? In terms of the spice?
A little bit of caboose.
It comes back in the back part of your throat.
Ooh.
So it's got a little spice to it. So that's the only bite of this I'm going to take. But it's a little bit texturally, it's different than beef, but it kind of tastes like beef.
Yeah. But I'm guessing you cure it and do all that kind of stuff to make it taste real good.
But the spice is there. If you're a fan of Cajun style stuff. All right. Buffalo Bob's beef and buffalo stick.
Beef and buffalo.
Beef and buffalo stick. And this is mild. So it'll be the opposite of what I just tried. So let's see.
Now, is this also a meat tube or?
No, this is a tube. It's not a jerky. These are difficult to open. That's the only thing I'm saying about Buffalo Bob.
Well, you know, they got to keep it fresh.
Yeah.
Especially because it's being shipped. So.
Yeah. Okay.
You don't want to have dried out meat.
Yeah, that's the worst, isn't it? When your meat's all dried out.
Yeah, it's all dried out. Okay. Wilting.
This should. I can't believe the difficulty I'm having getting this open. Wait a second. All right, maybe if I push up from the bottom of this and get the beef stick out.
Firmly grasp the beef stick with both hands.
Okay. Seriously, this is ridiculous.
You might just have to eat the plastic. I'm not going to lie to you.
All right, hang on. Seriously. Oh, there we go.
There we go.
Okay. All right, so again, this is beef and buffalo mild, and it's a stick, not a jerky. Ready? Mm. Oh, completely different texture than the alligator.
Tougher?
No.
No?
No. The alligator was a little tough.
Okay.
Oh, that's good. Again, texture is a lot like beef. That's really good. The spices in this are good. They're mild, but it's got a whang to it. As they say in Hollywood Nights. Well, wow. This punch does have a whang to it.
Jeez.
You ever see Hollywood Nights?
I don't think so. Doesn't not ring a bell, but I like that. It's kind of whang to it.
Yeah. Gaylord Sartain plays Captain Bimbo. He's a policeman.
So you'd put that above the... Did you like that more than the alligator?
Yes, I did.
All right.
I'll take another bite of it, in fact.
That's how much he likes it.
That's how much I like it. Okay. Put this one aside. 312-981-7200. Have you ever had any exotic meats? Okay. I'm going to take a drink of water because I have a live read here. I want to be able to read it. All right. Anybody have exotic meats? 312-981-7200. Checking out some jerky and some meat sticks here. Is she really going out with him? Is she really gonna take him home tonight? Is she really going out with him? Cause if my eyes don't deceive me, there's something going wrong around here. All right. The Nick DiGilio Show continues. Anti-Valentine's Day. It's our annual Anti-Valentine's Day show. And if you would like to join us, it's 312-981-7200. We're going to jump into the world of breakup songs and depressing songs and Anti-Valentine's Day songs coming up in a little bit. And then after 3, all the regular Friday features happen. We'll have You Big Dummy. That's where we read news stories of real people doing real dumb stuff, and then we vote on who's the biggest dummy. Straight out of context, that's when you listen to this radio station 24/7. Whenever anybody says something that you can pull out of context that sounds a little dirty, jot down the info and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. We play them every Friday. And Nick D Show spies. We want to know when people are talking about us on the show here. So jot that down and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com and then Fly Jams Friday. Right now, I am on the air here taste testing some exotic beef sticks and meat and jerky. And we do have a call here from Bruce. Hi, Bruce.
Yep.
Bruce, yeah, you're on the air. Turn your radio down.
Hi, Nick. How are you doing?
All right. What's going on?
Say,
Yeah, I've sampled rattlesnake, alligator, elk, bear, and many strange things.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, they all taste like chicken.
There it is. They all taste like chicken.
No, head of the woods mushrooms is awesome. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Now, listen, I missed your cold weather stories. I got a quick one. You want to hear it?
Don't have time right now, Bruce, but thank you. We're the subject is, you know, we're going to eat some exotic meats, and it is cold out. That's what we know. But thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Elk, bear, rattlesnake, all that stuff. All right, are you ready? Maple duck stick. So this is duck. Again, this is Buffalo Bob. Buffalo Bob's is the company that puts these exotic sticks and jerkies out and makes it very difficult to open the package. Okay. Okay, let's try this. This is the duck. It's maple duck, so it's got a maple flavor to it, and the meat involved is duck. So got it open. Here we go. All right. Oh, well, that's good. That's very good. I've had duck. I've had duck before. The maple flavor is a nice component. So that's Buffalo Bob's maple duck stick. Very good. Texture is all of these so far. These beef sticks or these meat sticks usually do have the same kind of texture. If you've ever had a Slim Jim, then you know it's kind of pull it out. It has a chewy texture to it, but that goes with making a jerky, and that goes with making a beef stick. So I like that one. That's good. That was a good one. All right. Let's see about this one. How about some beef and ostrich? Beef and ostrich stick. Let's see how this one. See if I can get it open. So, nope, not open. It's the only issue right now is getting these things open. That's the only issue that I'm having right now. So, all right. Let's try this. All right. Yeah, this is okay, here we go. This is a beef and ostrich stick. So it's both beef and ostrich. Okay? And this is like it's a stick, it's not a jerky. So let's try this. Beef and ostrich. All right. Okay, the texture is very beefy. Ostrich had a very. It's interesting. You could taste there's hints of beef. You can, you know, since it does have beef and ostrich, but this ostrich has a very interesting flavor. I've never had it before. Tom, have you ever had any weird exotic meats?
When I was living in Singapore, we would eat snake soup a lot.
Snake soup.
Yeah.
What would that? How would that be served?
In a bowl with a spoon.
Well, were there actual chunks of snake in it?
Yeah, there was snake meat in it.
Was it good?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. And, you know, you'd be walking around, there'd be open-air markets. So, like, you just walk, you go meat shopping.
Yeah.
Down at, like, Clark Key. And you just have, like, literally just pig carcasses hanging up on big meat hooks.
Yeah, I've seen, you know, the amount of Anthony Bourdain that I've watched.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of the travel shows, the food shows. Those open markets are pretty crazy.
Yeah, but you get great stuff. Duck from open air markets is really good. I don't know if it would count, but like I've had exotic parts of animals.
Okay,
we typically eat, like cow brains and beef tongue.
Well, beef tongue.
I mean, that's a classic.
Yeah, it's a classic.
You know, haggis, just the innards of a sheep.
Yeah,
all wrapped up. Yeah,
in a stomach lining.
It's really good for Valentine's Day.
Nothing
says "I love you" like the intestinal tract of a sheep.
Yeah, haggis. So, what are you eating?
I'm trying a little bit of that gator jerky.
That's what I got right here in my hand.
Yeah.
What do you think?
So this is Cajun style.
This is barbecue. I have barbecue. You have Cajun-style alligator.
Cajun-style alligator.
And this is jerky.
Yeah, it's jerky.
It's not a tube. It's a jerky.
Yeah.
What do you think?
You don't like spicy food, right? Not particularly.
No.
You don't hate it, but it's not.
I don't hate it, but I don't understand the obsession with, like, really, really hot stuff.
Mm.
Like, I love watching the Hot Ones.
Yeah,
where they test out hot sauce. Well, they test out hot sauce while interviewing celebrities.
Yeah, Sean Evans, yeah. Chris Lake Central alumnus.
I love that. I love what's it's online. You can watch it online. It's called Hot Ones, and they interview celebrities as they taste chicken wings. They have chicken wings in front of them, hot wings in front of them, with certain sauces, hot sauces, and each progressive sauce that they try gets hotter and hotter and hotter and hotter until they get to like Da Bomb, which is I think one of the hottest ones. And the Scoville numbers go skyrocketing.
Yeah, because the Scoville is the measurement of how hot it is.
Right.
And so, like, it starts out in, like, the thousands.
Right.
So, like, there's not, like, one Scoville, two. It's, like, always in the thousands. But,
right.
I remember once we had Amy Guth try hot sauces on air. And we gave her, there's this place called, like, Pepper Palace or something like that over in Water Tower.
Yeah.
And they keep a hot sauce in like a Bible, and it's just this tiny vial, like it's a book, and you buy the book and you open it up.
Uh-huh.
It's a little vial of hot sauce, and you're only supposed to take like a match, like maybe the size of a matchstick head. And she tried that on air, and we had to stay on break for like a full 4 or 5 minutes.
I can't.
Because she couldn't even speak.
Yeah.
It was so hot.
Yeah.
And of course, great newsman David Jennings comes down. He says, "Hey, I bet it's not that hot."
Oh no.
Takes just a little bit more than a matchstick head, puts it right on his tongue, and he turns and looks at me. He's like, "I've just made the biggest mistake of my entire life." I was like, I know. But this Gator jerky is quite good. I like that. I like that kick to it. It's good. It's a little rubbery.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's good.
All right. I'm going to taste test the wild boar. This is barbecued flavored wild boar, and it's a stick, not a jerky. Again, these are from Buffalo Bob's Wild Meats or whatever it's called. So let's try this. Buffalo Bob's Wild Boar Barbecue. All right. Again, this is a tube, not a stick, or not a jerky. Here we go. All right. Smooth consistency, I will say right away. I got to tell you. This Buffalo Bob makes a good meat stick. You know, the spices, the flavors, every one of them is tasty. This has a different consistency. Wild boar has a different consistency. It's a little smoother than some of the other ones, including like the alligator and stuff. Wild boar beef stick barbecue. Recommend it. I recommend it.
It gets the Nick D. Show seal of approval.
It gets the seal of approval. I'm going to take another bite, in fact, of the wild boar. Yeah. By the way, you know, sometimes you get a meat stick, and the tubing might on the outside might be too rough. Like it, you know, you like a good snap, but you don't want to chew it. You don't want to have to chew it for 5 hours to get through the skin on the outside to get to the
right
to get to the meat. So I recommend that. That's good.
It's remarkable the number of things that you can turn into jerky.
Yeah. You can turn anything into jerky.
There was this house I drove past once in California.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a dilapidated place, and a big sign outside said just jerky here.
That's all it said? Jerky
yeah,
here?
Jerky here. I was like, well, I kind of want to see what this is all about. So I pull over.
Yeah.
And go to this jerky house, I guess. And it was this old man, pot-bellied. Big, massive white beard and a straw kind of cowboy hat.
Yeah.
And in there, it was just all just carcasses of everything, like just like on wooden tables.
So
he's like curing the meat in the back and all this kind of stuff.
That Texas Chainsaw Massacre house.
Basically, yeah. And real nice guy. The only thing was they were making man jerky in there. They were definitely making... I felt like he was definitely killing people. I was like, he's like, "Do you want to see where I cure it?" And I was in California. There's a guy going, "You want to see where I cure the meat?"
Yeah.
I was like, "That's the last place I want to go, right? Because I'm going to wind up on a meat hook."
Yeah, that's kind of a red flag.
I was like, "You know what? No, thank you. I will buy some of your jerky so that you don't kill me and drag me to your murder house."
Okay, the last one I'm going to try here is antelope. So this is a stick again, not a jerky. You know, of the Slim Jim-like variety. And this is antelope from Buffalo Bob's. Oh, okay. This is a little, the texture of this one's a little thicker, a little chewier. This one's probably the chewiest one. Antelope is chewy. That's what I'm saying. So, good, a little chewy, though. All right, really quickly, let me rate these. Wild boar, love the wild boar. Ostrich was actually really good. Maple duck, had duck before. And the buffalo, mild buffalo. I think I got to go with, I think I got to go with wild boar.
Big fan of the pig.
Yeah, I got to go with wild boar. I think of all the meat sticks that I've consumed here and taste tested on the air, I think the winner is wild boar. So there you go. Buffalo Bob's, what's the name of the website again? Jerky Village, what's it called?
Jerky Dynasty.
All right, check out Jerky Dynasty. And again, my thanks to listener Deanna for sending in the meats. All right, why don't we do this? We will go to a commercial here, and then we shall continue the Anti-Valentine's Day with Anti-Valentine's Day breakup songs. We'd love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Breakup songs, 312-981-7200. The Nick DiGiulio Show continues. How about when she just starts crying in the video? You know? Well, what are we talking about here? We were talking about Sinead yesterday when Jim was on, Jim Ryan was on the show. We were talking music. She's amazing. That is one of the quintessential breakup songs, one of the quintessential anti-Valentine's Day songs. And I want to hear from you. It's Nick DiGiulio here, the Anti-Valentine's Day show, our 23rd annual Anti-Valentine's Day show. And we're going to talk about breakup songs and Anti-Valentine's Day songs. Because songs can kill you. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going through a breakup and you hear, like, a certain song, it's you know, I mean, it could have, like, a devastating effect on you. So, I played one of my favorite bands in the world, as you know, is Buffalo Tom. And my buddy Bill Janovitz, who is the lead singer-songwriter, Buffalo Tom, he has written one of the greatest anti-Valentine's breakup songs of all time, and that's Tail Lights Fade. Tail Lights Fade, which is like, might be my favorite song of all time. You know, I'd have to think about it and weigh the other options, but it's certainly, you know, one of my top three, at least, if not my favorite song of all time. Tail Lights Fade by Buffalo Tom. Maybe we'll hear a little bit of that. Before we jump into the breakup songs and the anti-Valentine's Day songs, again, talk, text 312-981-7200. What are the songs that break your heart? I do have a couple of Valentine's Day stories. How about this? Americans are expected to spend more than $26 billion for Valentine's Day this year, according to the National Retail Federation. Well, it probably comes as no surprise that at least half of that dollar figure will be spent on spouses and significant others. $1.7 billion will be spent on pets. That figure means the average consumer will spend $12.21 on pets this year. Spending on pets for Valentine's Day has had a huge increase over the years. In 2010, Americans spent $400 million on pets. We've always heard of puppy love, but pets are definitely seeing a larger share of Valentine's Day spending. Says Prosper Insights Executive Vice President of Strategy, Phil Rist. Could your title be longer? Husbands and wives don't need to be worried if their spouses are buying a Valentine's Day gift for someone else. Most likely it's greeting cards for their children's class at school or flowers or a family member or maybe even a treat for the family dog. Overall, Valentine's Day spending is expected to jump from $20.7 billion in 2019 to $27.4 billion in 2020. The NRF expects that consumers will spend $14.1 billion on significant others, $4.2 billion on other family members, $2.1 billion on friends, and $1.8 billion on coworkers and others. The total figure spent by Americans on Valentine's Day has doubled in the last decade. The average expected spending went from $103 to $196 per person over the last decade. The NRF estimates that 37% of all Valentine's Day spending is on flowers, followed by 34% on an evening out and 21% on jewelry. Men plan to spend more than women at $291.15 compared to the $106.22. But nearly $2 billion on for pets. That's pretty ridiculous. Don't you find that kind of ridiculous, Tom?
I mean, for some people, those are their one and only Valentine's.
Yeah. You know?
That's okay. Yeah. I understand that.
All right, how about this? Here's the perfect Valentine's Day gift for the newly found single people. The El Paso Zoo will name a cockroach after your ex and then feed it to a meerkat live on live on camera. Sorry. First of all, meerkats make me laugh. Just in general, they just crack me up. So anyway, if you got an ex, they'll give you a cockroach name. They'll name the ex the cockroach after your ex, and then they'll feed it to a meerkat, and you can watch it. As part of their "Quit Bugging Me" campaign, participants can message the El Paso Zoo on Facebook with the name of their ex. The cockroaches will then be fed to the meerkats. The zoo prefers to use Madagascar hissing cockroaches, as they explained. They do actually hiss. They're very large species of cockroach. Definitely not the largest, but it's one that we actually do breed here at the zoo for feeding purposes. The educational specialist at the El Paso Zoo, Sarah Murphy, said the feast will be live streamed on the zoo's website and Facebook page on Valentine's Day. So if you're interested, you can contact the El Paso Zoo via their Facebook page. Give them the name of your ex. And then they'll on live on the camera there on the internets and on the website, they'll feed it to a meerkat.
Ain't that just the way?
I think there's also another story that ties into this one where they're actually doing it with mice. You can name a mouse. They'll name a mouse after your ex and then feed it to whatever.
Yeah.
Animals eat mice.
I do it with salmon. The name is salmon after your ex, and then feed it to a bear.
It's really stupid when you think about it, though. I mean, it's funny having a meerkat eat your ex, you know? All right. Well, those were two quick stories that were Valentine Day related. Tons of spending, especially on pets, and you can get a cockroach named after your ex and have it fed to a meerkat. So those are some nice tie-ins here on anti-Valentine's Day. But we're talking about breakup songs and the best anti-Valentine's Day songs. What songs break your heart? 312-981-7200. Here's Jeff on WGN. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, how you doing?
All right, what's up?
I have a breakup song in mind.
All right.
How about Debbie Gibson, Foolish Beat?
Oh, I don't know if I'm familiar with that one.
Yeah, I just went through a bad breakup myself.
Oh, that's too bad, Jeff. That's what we're here. We are talking about bad breakups and stuff like that. So I appreciate it. Debbie Gibson. Debbie Gibson doesn't seem like the kind of performer that would do a heartbreaking song. Is this it? I remember this song. Yeah, I remember this song. I remember it. I just always associate her with, like, you know, upbeat, up-tempo songs. You know what I mean, Tom? Like Electric Youth. You remember Electric Youth?
Well, I know what it is. I don't remember.
Well, no, because you were just before you were born.
Yeah. Electric Youth.
Electric Youth. Interesting fact, both she and Tiffany posed for Playboy after their careers kind of dwindled. All right, how about this one now, Tom? Mm-hmm. You can attest to this. I'm looking at this from Time Out New York, And they've put together a list of breakup songs. First one on this list is "Love Will Tear Us Apart."
Yeah,
by Joy Division.
My possibly my favorite song ever written. Seriously, it's genius. I've thought about getting that tattooed on me, but my girlfriend's afraid that people get the wrong idea.
Yeah.
She'll be like, they think we're miserable. I was like, but we're not miserable. And she's like, yeah, but they'll think we're miserable. They'll think it.
Yeah. Well, Joy Division wasn't known for, I mean, they're ironically named. But yeah, Love Will Tear Us Apart. Can we hear a little bit of that? Do we have that? A little bit of Love Will Tear Us Apart. This is the first one in this article about breakup songs and anti-Valentine's Day songs. 312-981-7200. Phone lines and text lines are open if you would like to join us. Even the vocals, not even just the lyrics, but even the vocals are like, oh, man.
Yeah, Ian Curtis was a gloomy guy.
Yeah.
A very gloomy guy.
All right, how about this? You Ought to Know by Alanis Morissette. Yeah, and, you know, obviously the story behind this song, the best story behind this song is the fact that it is apparently inspired by her relationship with Dave Coulier from Full House. Because we were, you know, you're trying to think, man, wow, why? Who would she write a song? Man, that must have been an incredible relationship. And it was about Dave Coulier. So, anyway, that's my favorite detail about You Ought to Know. But it's a great breakup song. 312-981-7200, Anti-Valentine's Day continues. Yeah. One of my favorite songs of all time. And they never saw Ridgely again. From Keanu. I love that movie. I think that movie's hilarious. And they never saw Ridgely again. Anna Faris's cameo in it. Come on. It's so funny because, like, you're about 4 minutes into the scene before you realize that she's actually playing Anna Faris. Hey, the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, it's Valentine's Day. I hate Valentine's Day. This is the 23rd annual Valentine's Day show that I've hosted, and we're into the you can't talk about anti-Valentine's Day without talking about breakup songs or songs that are very anti-Valentine's Day, and that's what we're doing here. Here's Paul on WGN. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, one of my all-time favorites. You can listen to it any time of the year. Promises by Eric Clapton.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I just love that song.
Yeah, so that's a good anti-Valentine's Day song, yeah. Good old Clapton. All right, Paul, thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, do we have any of that?
Cause a promotion when you come to town. Give them a smile and they melt. Having lovers and friends is all good and fine, but I don't like yours and you don't like mine.
Great song. You don't hear this song enough. You know what I mean? That's a great song. All right. 708 says, best breakup song ever is Already Gone by the Eagles. Because I'm already gone. Yeah, that is, I mean, it's, you know, people love that. I can't stand the Eagles, but people do love Already Gone. It is a classic. Mike from Anuka said, Gloria Gaynor's I Will Survive. That's a great song. I love that song. I also love that it became a gay anthem. I do. I love that. I think it's fantastic. And people enjoy roller skating to it. That was a big roller skating song.
Right after the Locomotion.
Yeah. Everybody's doing a brand new Grand Funk version, Grand Funk Railroads version. How about Robbie Fills, my favorite breakup song by Robbie Fills, I Just Want to Meet the Man. 262 area code. Is that I Want to Meet the Man? What is who is the new man in his ex's life? That sounds like what it's about. Why would you want to meet the man? I don't want to meet any of my exes, you know, spouses or boyfriends. Uh, 816 area code says, Nick, here's a couple of breakup songs. The End of the World by Skeeter Davis, 1962. And Kill Earl by the Dixie Chicks. I love Kill Earl. I love that song by the Dixie Chicks. Saddest breakup songs. Empty Chairs by Don McLean. This is from the 765 area code. Boats Against the Current by Eric Carmen. I don't think I know Boats Against the Current. 262. Two songs that get me are Caroline by Concrete Blonde and Holding Back the Years by Simply Red. And Simply Red does a fantastic cover of If You Don't Know Me By Now, which is a great cover, one of my favorite covers of a song. Mick Hucknall, right? Isn't he the lead singer? Mick Hucknall, lead singer of Simply Red. Great soulful voice, and he's a total ginger.
Yeah, well, I mean, that makes sense for Simply Red.
Yeah, that's why.
Ooh, he's looking a little rough these days.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, next one mentioned here in the article, Thank You, Next by Ariana Grande. Don't know it. They mentioned Sinead O'Connor, Nothing Compares to You. What Becomes of the Brokenhearted by Jimmy Rowe. That's a good song. Can you grab that one? That's also a fly jam. What Becomes of the Brokenhearted by Jimmy Ruffin. Oh, that's a good song. It's a classic. It's a solid gold soul classic. Is how they describe it, and it's appropriate for a Friday on this show, Fly Jams Friday. So, do we have any of that? Such a great song. Everything about it, the production of it, the sound, the song itself, the lyrics, it's such a good song. Jimmy Ruffin.
Very Motown.
Yep. How about Leonard Cohen's Hey, That's No Way to Say Goodbye? Don't Think Twice, It's All Right by Bob Dylan. Go Your Own Way by Fleetwood Mac. It was the result of the fallout of the split between Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks in 1976. It may have been a living hell for the recording of its creators for the recording of Rumors, but it's one of the most defiant, furious songs of a generation. Someone Like You by Adele. That, of course, reminds me of one of the funniest SNL sketches I've ever seen in my life. Do you remember the sketch, Tom?
No.
McConaughey was the host. It was a Thanksgiving show, and they did a sketch where the family's at the table, and then they start talking politics, and they start, you know, they're talking, you know, politics and stuff, and they start yelling at each other, and a little girl gets up, goes to a boombox, and presses play, and Someone Like You by Adele starts playing, and they all stop and sing along and start crying, and then eventually they start looking more like Adele every time, because she would turn off the boombox, they would start talking again, and inevitably there'd be an argument about politics or something. She'd go back, hit the song, they would sing along. And then eventually they had the fingernails, the long fingernails. They had a flowing hair, makeup. And there's actual footage. It's really seriously one of the funniest SNL sketches of all time. And I mean that. And there's this great footage. I think you can probably find it online of Adele watching that sketch and losing her mind. Like crying with laughter, like falling off of the chair laughing. Adele watching that sketch. And it's a great song, Someone Like You. A lot of Adele songs are depressing. You know? Oh, God. I'm not going to tell. I'd say 414 says, Hey, Nick, how about telling that story where you broke up with a girl and then she sat across from you sat across from her at the restaurant eating while she sat there crying? It's true.
How old were you?
I don't remember.
Were you like a kid?
No,
oh,
I think I was in my 20s. Yeah. I was really hungry.
Nick, come on, man. About, you never go, you never bring scene, up at a restaurant.
How about the scene at the beginning, the very beginning of Modern Romance, okay? Which is, by the way, a fantastic movie to watch on Valentine's Day. Mm-hmm. Albert Brooks' brilliant Modern Romance. It's so great. But he breaks up with her at a restaurant. And I just don't think, because eventually, I guess a bunch of times, the character is Catherine Harrell plays his girlfriend in it. Yeah. She comes in and meets him in at the booth in the restaurant. They order the food, and he's like, I don't think this is working. And she's like, not again. You know, like, he breaks up with her, like, every couple of months or something.
At a restaurant.
And then he breaks up with her at the restaurant, and she walks out mad. And he comes out, and he comes out, he's like, don't leave. We could at least eat.
See, the only time I've ever had to break up with people was by the lockers.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's not an easy situation. But I will say this, I'm usually the one that's being broken up with. Historically, in the relationships that I've had, I'm the one who gets dumped. I would say 90% of the relationships that I've had, I'm the dumpy. Mm-hmm. So, 801 says, best breakup song, Seasons in the Sun by Terry Jacks. That's from Mark in Utah. That song is ridiculous. How about One More Minute by Weird Al Yankovic? Lately by Stevie Wonder, Heartbreaking from the 708. Yeah, oh, man. One of the best breakup songs, I think, is 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover, Paul Simon. You've Lost That Love and Feeling, The Righteous Brothers. Just rattle off a bunch of titles here. I Will Always Love You, Whitney Houston. Dolly Parton wrote that song. I Will Survive, Gloria Gaynor, we mentioned that. F.U. by CeeLo Green. I love that song. Back to Black, Amy Winehouse. Oh. Lot of Amy Winehouse's songs. Mm. The White Stripes, I Just Don't Know What to Do with Myself. Heard It Through the Grapevine, Marvin Gaye. How Do You Mend a Broken Heart by Al Green. The Scientist by Coldplay. Don't know that one.
You do. If you heard it, you'd recognize it. Okay.
I Don't Want to Get Over You, The Magnetic Field. Oh, God, The Magnetic Fields. I started a relationship with a girl. We just started going out, literally like 2 days we were going out. This was Cheeto Fingers. Eventually, you know, moved in. We had a nice long relationship. But she's like, I don't want to scare you, but I bought you this. And she gave me a copy of 69 Love Songs. And she's like, I don't want to scare you. How about Against All Odds, Take a Look at Me Now by Phil Collins? Believe by Cher. Back Baby by Jessica Pratt. Heartbreak Hotel by Elvis Presley. Tracks of My Tears by Smokey Robinson. So, all right, well, there you go. Anti-Valentine's Day. Those are some songs you can listen to. All right. The Nick DiGilio Show continues. We got the regular features coming up.
You big dummy. You big dummy. See what you did?
Oh, no, you big dummy.
You dummy!
All right. The Nick DiGilio Show continues on a Friday morning, and the regular Friday features have happened. Vic, by the way, is off, so obviously we didn't do a Vic's Picks. But the regular Friday features have begun with You Big Dummy. This is where we read real news stories of real people doing real dumb stuff, and then we vote on who's the biggest dummy. Tom votes, I vote, and then you vote. 312-981-7200. Here we go. Dummy number one, dummy number one, dummy number one. A Michigan woman claims a teller at a local bank called the police on her after she refused to remove her surgical mask that she says she was wearing to protect herself from the coronavirus and other illnesses. Amanda Ullman told Fox 2 that she went to a Key Bank location in downtown Dearborn last week while wearing a black mask that features a set of sharp teeth on the front. One of the tellers asked her to remove the mask, but Ullman refused, allegedly prompting the teller to contact the police. She jumps on the phone after she pushes this button, which I assume is the panic button, and I hear a giant locking sound, she told the outlet, adding that she chose this mask because it can be washed and reused, unlike traditional surgical masks. Ullman, who said she and her family are wearing masks as extra protection after hearing about cases of the novel virus in U.S., which has reported 13 cases to date, was reportedly locked in the bank and was forced to wait for police to arrive. Nothing about the design, absolutely nothing about freaking them out or anything. They just kept saying that was for their protection. I don't understand what my mask has to do with their protection. Police later arrived at the scene. She was able to leave the bank shortly after. Following the incident, Ullman told Fox 2 that she plans to close her account for 5 years.
And I can't wait to see you starring in your first movie.
Yeah.
Deep Dummy.
I'm not kidding you. You're a big dummy.
Dummy number two, dummy number two, dummy number two. A Nebraska rapper has confessed to committing a murder on TV. The so-called popular artist who goes by the name of Lil D-Man made the shocking confession during a freestyle, which was captured on camera for a local news show. The camera was rolling as the rapper, who picked up by the Marion County Police Department for his alleged involvement in a deadly shooting, he was walking out of the building with his hands behind his back, likely in handcuffs, while being ushered by an officer in an awaiting car. That's when he dropped some bars, which began, "Shout out to the MPD, they caught me." MPD stands for the Marion County Police Department. During the freestyle, Lil D-Man explained what crime he had committed that would possibly land him in jail. After he's done rapping, a reporter asked him, "Did you do it?" Appearing to be delirious, he quickly replied, "Yeah, I did it." When asked why he did it, he took a moment before answering, "Self-defense." There's no word on the crime that Lil D-Man was allegedly involved in. It's not clear whether the evidence police had before him while he was arrested, but he made it easier for the authorities to charge him and put him in jail with this confession captured on video.
You bigger dummy than my dummy. Dummy! Dummy!
Dummy number three. Dummy number three. Dummy number three. Speeding with your wife, infant, and hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of cocaine in your car is a great idea if you want to attract the attention of law enforcement, which is exactly what happened in this case. A man driving 85 miles an hour as he careened among cars and lanes during rush hour at Interstate 5 in Southern California, his wife and infant son in tow, was arrested Friday after U.S. Customs and Border Protection agents discovered, oh my God, more than 50 pounds of cocaine in his vehicle. The agents pulled over the 34-year-old U.S. citizen who they did not identify publicly when they saw him driving erratically between lanes and around drivers. He was in a 2012 Nissan Altima, according to KSWTV. It was about 4:45 p.m. on a Friday when they followed the driver to San Clemente, a coast city halfway between San Diego and Los Angeles, where he continued the frantic driving, the TV station said. When they pulled into the shopping center parking lot, where he and his wife jumped out of the car and walked away at a fast clip, agents approached the couple and asked for consent to search their vehicle. The man agreed, and agents discovered a duffel bag in the car trunk that contained 20 brick-shaped packages of cocaine. Agents also discovered an additional package of cocaine tucked inside the shopping bag near the infant seat. In total, there were 21 bundles of cocaine weighing 51.25 pounds and an estimated street value of $512,500. So they get out of the car, they leave the baby in the car? Oh, man. All right. We will continue. You big dummy. Nick DiGilio Show continues with the Friday features, and we are in the middle of You Big Dummy. Let's get back to it. Dummy number four, dummy number four, dummy four. A man who was making his way back to his Minneapolis hotel at around 3 a.m. Saturday tried to cross the icy Mississippi River near the Stone Arch Bridge and then fell partly through the ice. He told the fire crews that rescued him that his Google Maps directed him to cross the river, according to Minneapolis Fire Department spokesman Brian Tyner, who speculated that the man misinterpreted the direction and should have crossed the bridge instead. Oh, yeah, that's probably what Google Maps meant, Tyner said. The man who was visiting from out of state had a mild case of hypothermia.
Get lost, dummy.
Before this game, you were just a plain dummy. But after tonight, you'd be a broke dummy.
Dummy number five. Dummy number five. Five. Authorities believe an East St. Louis, Illinois woman with a history of theft cases against her ran an online boutique out of her basement where she was selling stolen merchandise. Now, 29-year-old Twana Trotter, wow, there's a name, Twana Trotter, say that fast five times. We should get that woman we had on earlier in the week, the fast-talking woman.
Fran.
Is behind bars after pleading guilty in a separate 2018 stealing case at a Walmart in Chesterfield, Missouri. On Thursday, Trotter pleaded guilty and was sentenced to 4 years in prison. Investigators say Trotter has hit most of all of the retail areas in Chesterfield, Missouri, just across the Mississippi River from East St. Louis. Sergeant Keith Ryder of the Chesterfield Police Department said investigators found roughly $20,000 worth of stolen merchandise in Trotter's East St. Louis home during a police search last November. Ryder said Trotter and others stole the merchandise from many stores, including Chesterfield. Then Trotter would try to sell the goods on Facebook. She basically had a boutique set up in her basement where she would advertise what she had to show them a live video and, I guess, hoping for people to come and buy those products from her, Ryder said. I describe it as the QVC of stolen clothes. I mean, she had things set up and things she was planning on selling that day. Ryder said his detectives would actually watch Trotter's Facebook live sessions to see what she was selling. The products that they were observed that she was selling were able to they were able to track to retail areas in Chesterfield as well as throughout St. Louis County and as far as Osage Beach, he said. Ryder said that Trotter has a history of arrests in Chesterfield for retail thefts. Ryder referred to her as a professional shoplifter who treated the crimes as business. Retail crime is not a victimless crime, Ryder said. It's going to drive the prices up. You know, there's a lot of other issues with the retail crime, so that we really had wanted to stop it. And she was really hitting St. Louis area hard. Ryder said that the case at Trotter's home is still under investigation by authorities in Illinois. At this point, no charges have been filed in yet connection with the search and seizure.
So to the dummy with the black mustache. What kind of life do you think it is being the father of a young dummy?
All right. There you go. There's some dummies. Never a lack of dummies, Tom.
Never, ever.
As long as there are humans, we have a segment.
This is gonna be a tough segment after the apocalypse. Once we hit the Mad Max Fury Road thing.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. By the way, they're doing a Fury Road intro to a regular segment now on Colbert, where they put the candidates' faces on the characters as they're driving in the car. It's Fury Road to the White House is what they're...
Wow.
Witness me! Yeah, no, yeah, and it's Oh, who is Witness? Whose face is on Witness Me? I can't remember. But they put the candidates' faces.
So now probably Nicola... no, it's probably Andrew Yang, now he's out.
No, Yang is... Yeah, I know, Elizabeth Warren is Nicholas Holt.
Okay.
Bernie is Max. It's really funny. Okay. It's always funny. It's Stephen Colbert. He's great. Okay. So, dummies, we got a vote here. Let me do a recap. And then 312-981-7200. First person through gets to be our third vote. 312-981-7200. We got the bank teller who called the police because someone had a surgical mask on and wouldn't take it off. We've got the Nebraska rapper, Lil D Man, who confessed to a murder while rapping on TV. We've got the guy who was doing 85 miles an hour with his wife, his infant son, and 51 pounds of cocaine in the car. We've got the guy who fell through the ice in Minneapolis and said that Google Maps told him to do it. And then we have the woman who is basically running a QVC of stolen goods out of her house. All right, Tom, where's your brain this week on these?
That's a tough one. I think I'm between either the guy who walked into a pond or into a body of water instead of taking a bridge because Google Maps told him to.
Not just a body of water. It was the Mississippi River.
Yeah, the Mississippi River. That's it. It was the Mississippi River. Walked into the big muddy.
Yeah.
There's bridges.
Yeah.
Or the rapper who confessed to murder on camera. I'm going to say the rapper who confessed to murder.
Lil D Man?
Lil D Man. Where is he from? Was he from Arkansas?
Nebraska.
Oh, Nebraska.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Tough times out in Nebraska.
Lil D Man.
Yeah. Nah, man. That's the weird part. It's like you can have murdered someone. Just don't confess to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
On camera. If you're trying to get away with it, that is.
Yeah. I think that I think the bank teller is just kind of overreacting. You know,
you need to see the picture of the mask.
Yeah, because it's kind of a scary mask.
Well, it's a black mask and it's got
teeth and
it's got like sharp, it's not like a Halloween mask, but it's got like a sharp teeth smile.
Yeah.
It looks like if someone walked into a bank like that, I'd be like, this place is about to get robbed.
Yeah.
I'm about to get thrown on the floor.
Wait, does she look like Immortan Joe?
Kinda.
Yeah, with the mask. Oh, by the way, that's Trump.
In that extended metaphor. Yeah, no, she's scary looking. If I were to tell her, I'd be like, I'm about to be robbed by this lady.
Okay, all right. So then the rapper Lil D Man's a good one. The guy with the infant and the wife in the car, what the hell is that?
That's
especially if
dummy.
they both got out of the car and left a baby in the car.
Imagine if that baby drove off with a blow.
The kid's making a break for it. the woman running the QVC, the fact that she was doing it online and all the cops just watched.
Well, that's the thing. It's smart up until that point. That's a great grift up until you start broadcasting it.
Yeah. The cops are just sitting there watching it going, yeah.
No, she's running an absolute monster of a business. The only mistake she made was broadcasting it to everyone. You got to keep that stuff down low.
Yeah.
On the DL.
It's just so ridiculous. $20,000 worth of stolen merchandise in her house.
Remarkable, actually.
$20,000. And just like ripping off, Walmarts and stuff.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it's just like, fell off the back of a truck.
Yeah.
The classic.
All right. So you're going with Lil D Man. We're going to have the two that our listener is going to have to choose from because I'm going with the guy who fell through the ice on the Mississippi River. And told the cops that Google Maps told him to do it. So it's between, these are the two choices. You have the Nebraska rapper Lil D Man confessing to a murder while freestyling on TV. And you got a guy who fell through the ice in Minneapolis and told the cops that the Google Maps told him to do it. Mark, which one of those two are you voting for?
This is the best. These are probably the best dummies you've ever had, but I got to go with Lil D Man. That is the biggest dummy.
Okay, Mark. Thank you, buddy.
All right.
A keen-eyed American.
There you go, man. Lil D Man.
There you go. Lil D Man, dummy of the week.
Oh,
the D
man.
Stands for dummy.
He did a shout-out, but I love the fact that he shouted out to the police department. Shout-out to the MPD, Lil D Man.
That'd be like if I went and robbed H&M on Michigan Avenue. I was just like, shout out to CPD.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Oh, man. I want to see this woman's mask. Now I'm very curious.
It's not a mask you should be wearing in public, probably, if we're being 100%
She wants to be safe from the virus, but also stylish. I think that's what's happening, right?
I get it. You can get a rewashable mask. There's nothing wrong with trying to protect yourself.
Yeah.
That's cool. Go for it. Why does it have to have weird teeth on it?
Yeah. Okay.
Explain that to me.
Okay. So the bank teller freaked out, saw the teeth, and went, clink. Lockdown. The bank is on lockdown.
I've never been a bank teller, but I'd lock down for virtually anything.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen the town. I know how this goes.
Yeah, I've seen the town. By the way, good movie. Very good movie. Affleck directed that one, didn't he?
Affleck?
Yeah, Affleck.
He did.
Yeah.
He did direct it.
He directed Argo, too, right? Because he won Best Director for... Or no, the movie won Best Picture. Best Director.
Yeah, it won Best Picture.
Right. And what else did he direct?
Gone Baby Gone.
Gone Baby Gone. Didn't he direct some gangster movie a couple of years ago?
We
Own the Night. He directed that, too, didn't he?
Yeah, tanked.
Yeah, not good.
It's very bad.
Not good. But the other ones are good.
Yeah, pretty, yeah.
I think The Town is my favorite of all of them. I love Gone Baby Gone, but I think The Town is my favorite.
Yeah, I would have rather watched The Town if... I like The Town a lot. I just kind of wish that Casey Affleck was in it and not Ben. I think Casey Affleck's a better actor, but he wouldn't have fit the role. He wouldn't have fit the role.
Casey Affleck what's the smart guy with the mop? Goodwill Hunting.
Goodwill Hunting.
Casey Affleck and Goodwill Hunting, the whole baseball glove scene, I cry laughing every single time. Cry laughing. He's hilarious in that movie.
Smart guy.
Smart guy with a mop. I always forget the name of the movies. We continue here with our regular features, and we'll be doing Straight Out of Context next. It's the Nick DiGilio Show on a Friday morning here on 720 WGN. So when I'm in your neighborhood, you better duck, because Ice Cube is crazy as F-bomb. As I leave, believe I'm stomping, but when I come back, boy, I'm coming straight out of context, context, context. Context.
What's up?
Tell them where you're from.
Straight out of context. 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 Context.
Ah, yes. Straight out of context. Another one of our Friday features we've been doing for years. This is when you listen to this radio station 24/7, as you should anyway, because it's the best. And whenever anybody at any time says something that you can pull out of context and it sounds a little dirty and it makes you giggle like a 9-year-old, jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. And then we play them all back in this segment every Friday morning. Okay, Tom, let us continue or begin.
All right, let's get started here with the great weatherman Demetrius Ivory. This one was caught by Mark D. in Aurora.
I got another 1 to 2 inches coming our way.
You could probably guess.
Snow. Yeah.
Snow
of which we didn't get much in the city.
In the city, no. But
I know they got slammed elsewhere, and Indiana got hit pretty hard. But we didn't get hit pretty bad. We didn't get bad. It wasn't too bad in the city.
No, but that cold's going to get to us today.
I'm staying in, man. I'm in the house. Heat on, blanket, TV. That's my plan, man.
The same thing as every other
pretty
night.
Pretty much same thing every day. Yeah, that's what I do every day. Okay.
All right. Next up, coming from Brian, it's John Williams.
I'd like to dip my toe in that.
You know, John's been representing lately.
John is off the chain.
Yeah. It's crazy because he's just, you know, he doesn't talk dirty. He doesn't do anything. He's one of the most professional broadcasters I've ever met.
Consummate.
Yeah, consummate. But what was he dipping his toe in there?
I think he was talking about travel. He was dipping his toe into calling for airline tickets because apparently it's a good way to get a deal.
Instead of going online.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because everybody uses the sites and everything. He's on the pulse. He says, no, you can actually get a really good deal by calling the airline
directly
to book tickets.
Instead of using the services. The commercials are all over the place for that, though.
Oh, God, it's killer.
Okay.
All right. Again, following up a John Williams with a John Williams.
Man.
This one coming to us from Kevin out in McHenry.
I got to pull the whole thing out.
Talking about fixing his dishwasher. Do you think if we made him like a little statue and just left it in the King of Straight Out, like he would?
Yeah,
I would feel about it. We should make him a little.
Yeah, Walk of Famer John Williams got inducted last year.
It's true.
Yeah,
real recognizes real.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
All right. This next one coming to us again, Demetrius Ivory. This time on the Rokan Show, caught by Wild Bill.
Other folks get 4 inches and 6 inches.
It's just going to, every time there's a weather forecast with snow in it, we're going to get We'll have material for this segment on Friday morning.
And it's never not funny.
No, because we're nine. Now, I do want to mention again, I haven't mentioned this in a while, that my producer, before Dan Shagrew, well, I mean, before a couple of producers, was Andy Herman. Andy Herman is the one who created this segment. It was his idea. Andy Herman's favorite TV show, of which he's seen every episode at least 100 times, knows everything about it. You're not going to be surprised. His favorite TV show is Three's Company. So this is a segment.
Innuendo.
This is a segment that comes from the mind of someone whose favorite TV show is Three's Company.
There you go. There you go.
I like the episode of Three's Company with the misunderstanding. That's my favorite one. That's okay.
Right. Next up, Bob Surratt, the great Bob Surratt,
yes.
Coming up at 5. This was caught by Brian.
Hey, you're going to get some later. You're maybe not going to get some later.
Valentine's Day predictions 2020 from the great Bob Surratt.
Is that what it was?
No.
Oh.
He's talking about snow.
Oh, okay. For a second there, I was like, wait a minute. He was really talking about that?
Never.
No.
A family man like Bob Surratt.
Well, there's a lot of double entendre involving snow.
I know. It's shocking. Shocking.
All right.
Next one coming to us from the Lou Manfredini show. Another one from Brian. And this is Lou Manfredini and the great Joe Brand.
Me, and of course he wouldn't come.
He never comes.
He would never come.
Oh, man.
Followed up with a second Manfredini, which you love to see. And this one's coming to us from Deanna.
Double hung and triple hung.
Oh, man. What was he talking about?
I'm talking about Windows.
Ah. Oh, sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. All right, next one coming to us.
By the way, I just wanted to mention really quickly. I look up at the screen. You know, I got TVs on in here in the studio. That the woodchuck commercial for Geico kills me every time.
It's weird.
It makes me laugh every time. The new one where the guy's selling lumber.
Yeah.
And he's trying to do a commercial for his lumber store.
And they're just
I don't know why. Totally cracks me up. Okay, sorry.
That's all right. This next one is coming from the Startup Showcase show. Scott Catoon.
Oh, okay.
It's probably been a while since he's been on here. This is from Mike at Novak Construction.
You had to say some crazy stuff to get me off.
Oh, man. what was the context of that?
Talking about investments.
Oh, okay. Sure.
All right. Next one. This is Mark Carman, caught by Carrie. And it's probably been a while since he's been on. Real quick one here.
Must get off.
Oh, man. Come on. Carmen.
All right.
Yeah.
Always good to hear Mark. Always good to hear him. All right. Next one here. Dean Richards.
Oh, Dino.
Love when Dino is on. Uncle Dean. This one's caught by Mark in Norwood Park.
I've only just now been able to get feeling in my buttocks.
Buttocks. In my buttocks. Was he talking about the length of the Irishman?
That exactly. That's exactly what I was talking about. Good job.
Okay.
Good job. All right.
Buttocks.
All right. Two of you.
What?
A doubleheader of Nick D from Fox Valley Mike. Both of these are from Fox Valley Mike. Here's the first one.
You've got this thing that's, you know, that's like pushing on your crotch. Oh, I was talking about that standing roller coaster, the Iron Wolf. The worst roller coaster experience I've ever had.
Yeah.
All right.
And another one.
I need to know that there's something suspended below me. I can't have the dangling legs. I don't like the Batman ride.
No.
Hey, by the way, do we have any audio of Lou talking about stealing signs?
I think we may.
Okay.
I made a mistake adding this. I made a mistake putting ever including this on anything. I just
Lou Manfredini's interpretation of this is what it sounds like when people are stealing signs in a baseball game.
Oh boy.
Ta ta tu ta ti.
never not hilarious. One more time, we'll get back to it.
Ta ta tu ta ti.
I still do not understand that at all.
Walk of Fame.
Oh, yeah, he's on the Walk of Fame, yeah.
Is he?
I think he is.
Should
Isn't
be.
He?
If he's not, he should be.
Hell, if I'm on the Walk of Fame, Lou Miffy.
Sure. It's very true.
You know?
All right. Just a couple more here.
Okay.
Here. This one's both of us, you and I. Caught by Tony with an I. Right, what's her rate? Maybe.
I don't even know.
Okay.
I don't know. She doesn't charge me. Talking about Dana.
$60.
Is it 60 bucks?
I think that's a little steep, but hey.
For Dana?
Maybe.
Nothing is too steep for my future ex-wife, Dana DiLorenzo. We got to get her to Flashback this year. Got to get her back to town. I haven't seen her in a while. It's been too long.
I won't be here.
What?
I won't be here for Flashback.
Why?
Got to be across the pond.
Oh.
Yeah.
You're going to be gone the end of July, beginning of August?
Yes.
Oh, man.
I know. It's a bummer. Really bummer.
You wouldn't get to meet if Dana comes. Now you're not going to get to meet her.
Well, she'll have to come a week early.
All right. How okay, by the way, that sentence, that's going to be on next week's...
next week's segment. All right, we got to get through these.
All right, let's do it.
All right, Dave, this is from Dave Plyer's show, caught by Brandon Rockford.
Big, juicy Brazil nuts.
Who was that? A guest?
A guest from Anderson's Candy Shop.
Anderson's Candy Shop, yeah. The best, Anderson's Candy Shop. Okay,
and finally.
Last one.
So excited about this. First time someone got caught on the WGN TV early morning news.
Oh, yes.
First time.
Yes.
We did this. Here it is. Lauren Jiggetts. This is amazing.
Why don't you just stick it out for 10 minutes and get the discount?
All right. The inaugural submission from the 4 o'clock show here as we go over to Bradley Place, to our friends over there at Channel 9. We get the early morning news from 4 to 5 here, and keep your ears peeled, folks, who contribute to this segment. And whenever they do something on the TV side that is worthy of mention on this segment, jot it down. Okay, let's continue here. The Friday features will continue again with Nick D. Show Spies.
Ooh, what do you do? No one else can dance like you. So what's all the fuss? There ain't nobody
spies.
Like
hey.
Someone took your plans away. So what's all of us? There ain't nobody
spies.
Spies, spies, spies.
Like us.
There it is. All right. This is Nick D. Show Spies. This is when you listen to the radio 24/7 to this station. Whenever anybody mentions me or the show in any capacity, you're a spy. We want to know about it. Jot down the day, the time, who said it. Send it to nickdshow@gmail.com, and we play all these back in this segment every Friday morning. Okay, what do we got?
All right, just one spy here sent in to us by Diane in Naperville. This is on the Matt Bubala Show, and it actually features... A regular listener. Let's see if you can figure out who it is.
Okay.
Yeah, I put my car in 3 car shows because I was doing this move trying to work on Honda to give me a new car, and they're not biting. And I said, well, I'll take that as a maybe.
So is it an Accord with a million miles?
A Civic. 2008 really? Civic. And Honda's only given one car to somebody with a million miles in it. Guy had a 91 Accord wagon, and he was a mechanic and did all his own work. And took him 19 years to put a million miles. I did it in 10 and a half.
Wow.
And had all the service and repairs done at the dealership.
That's pretty cool.
Because the guy that Nick has on every month.
Tom Appel?
Tom, yeah. Yeah, he did a story on me on the Consumer Guide Automotive about a year ago.
Good old Doc.
Yeah, that's a great story.
It's a great story. It's a great story. When Tom heard about it, because Doc called in during our segment. Tom Appel, by the way, is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. He's our car expert. He's fantastic. I don't even drive, and I love talking to Tom. He's so educated, and he knows his stuff so well. Anyway, Doc called in, and then Tom was like, what? Couldn't believe it. They did a story on him, took pictures of the car, Doc with the car and everything. It's a crazy story. So, all right, that's Nick D's Show Spies. Are we ready for this?
when I grew up on the farm, fly was something we sprayed to kill, and jam was something we put on our breakfast toast.
Jam. Fly jam. Fly Jams Friday.
Oh, yeah. This is Fly Jam Friday on your overnight radio with my man, Nick D, on 720 WGN.
Yeah, there it is. Every Friday morning, we do some Fly Jams. 312-981-7200. We dedicate that. We'd like to start off the Friday, the weekend, with some funky stuff. We did this. We started doing this years ago. You know, in fact, we had my friend Mike Beyer on earlier because he co-wrote a play that's running at the factory right now, and he co-wrote a play called Hey Dancin', Hey Musical, and we had cast members in, and the music was very Fly Jam-ish, and that's the night we started it. That's how long ago it was when we started doing Fly Jams Friday. So did we get some requests? Oh, wait, let's say hello to Luscious Hushes.
Oh, yeah, Luscious Hushes, baby.
There he is, Luscious Hushes. Where was that your nickname?
In high school.
In high school?
Yeah, when I played on a volleyball team. Like, it was just like for fun during gym hour. They do a month long competition.
You must have been great at spiking.
That was all right. That was all right.
Because you're 7'8".
Nah, I was just solid. I was just solid as a rock, oh, as they say.
So Luscious Hushes.
Yeah, Luscious Hushes was my nickname.
Oh, well, now it's your DJ name.
I know. Pretty good one, too.
Yeah, I think so. Me. All right, well, what do we got request-wise?
All right, first up, we got a little Brian McKnight, Still in Love, coming to us from our buddy Chris. Take my breath away. Can't help but talk about you.
Brian McKnight, man. He's one of the kings of the slow jam.
Yeah, he can rock it.
Oh, he's one of the kings of the slow jam. You put Brian McKnight on, you turn the lights down. That's what you do. Get ready for a couples only at the roller rink.
Ooh.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
All right, next up, I know we've been doing anti-Valentine's Day, but
yeah.
One of our most loyal listeners, Mike in Louisville, his better half, Megan, wanted to hear a little something for Valentine's Day because she's a bad mamma jamma.
Oh.
She's a bad mamma jamma. Just as fine as she can be. Hey, she's a bad mamma jamma. Perfect in every dimension. She's got a figure that's shown up in attention. She's poetry in motion, a beautiful sight to see. I get so excited, you and her anatomy.
Her body measurements. You don't hear a lot of body measurements. Well, yeah, you do. Brick House has body measurements in it. So, and that's a song that we've heard here on the segment many, many times. Good old Brick House. All right. What's our next request?
All right, next request. You know, we were just talking about him with Jim yesterday, Mr. Smokey Robinson.
Oh, he got to meet Smokey Robinson. Jim Ryan, our music guy, went to see Smokey Robinson at the Chicago Theater, said he was unbelievably great.
Mm-hmm.
Turns 80 this week.
Can't believe
Smokey
it.
Robinson.
Can't believe
legend.
It. Well, we got a little bit of Smokey Robinson and the Miracles. It's Love Machine, and this is coming to us from Ken.
Is this Smokey Robinson? This is Smokey. This song is Smokey Robinson? Wow. I mean, I know this song. I just didn't. I guess I didn't realize it was Smokey Robinson.
Yeah, Smokey Robinson and the Miracles. Here's the best part.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to remember what Cheech and Chong movie it is where Cheech is going, I'm just a love machine, and I don't work for nobody but you. I'm just a love machine. okay, what do we got?
All right, we got this one pretty recently, but it's too good not to play. It's a little Billy Paul, me.
Oh, my favorite.
And Mrs. Jones.
My favorite.
Me and Mrs. Jones, we got a thing going on. We both know that it's wrong, but it's much too strong to let it go now. We meet every day at the same cafe.
Yeah. Best Fly Jam of all time. One of my favorite songs ever. I can't stand how much I love that. How much I love that song. Oh, it's perfect. That's a, you know, I talk about songs that are perfect. Perfect song. Best Fly Jam of all time. And I think that he only had one other hit, Billy Paul. He only had one other hit. But that's like a definitive song right there. I mean, that's it. Maybe like the best song of the 70s.
Yeah. And I guess I will say we got a correction from the 724. Love Machine, that's Smokey Robinson. That was post-Smokey.
That was just the Imperials.
The Miracles.
Oh, the Miracles.
Yeah, I guess. I did not know that.
Okay. That's what I was going to say. Okay. All right. Well, thank you for that. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you for
correcting us. I felt a little weird.
Felt uncomfortable.
I was like, wait a minute.
That's not Smokey.
Yeah. So, all right. What's our next request?
All right. Next one. Hopefully this is a portent for good things to come for everybody on Valentine's Day. It's a little James Brown. Get up. I feel like being a sex machine.
Oh, yeah. Get up. Get up. Stay on the scene. Like a sex machine. Like a sex machine. Get up. Get up. Stay on the scene. Sex machine. Get up. Get up. Stay on the scene. Like a sex machine.
I like the complicated lyrics.
Yeah, especially, you know, that guitar line. Wow, it's real tough.
Great song, though, man.
There's beauty in simplicity.
Wow.
There is great beauty in simplicity.
Okay. We got one more here?
Actually, that was our last request.
Oh, that's our last request.
For the moment. Okay. Yeah, the of ones that I can get right away.
All right. Well, keep the requests coming, and we'll do it again next Friday, as we do will all the regular Friday features. Also, on Monday when we come back, Sunday night into Monday morning, we'll have the Sunday night, Monday morning movie reviews with Eric and Steve.